Good afternoon. We would like to welcome you to the January 8th meeting of the Savannah Historic District Board of Review. The purpose of this board is to promote the educational, cultural, economic, and general welfare of the city of Savannah. This board is appointed by City Council and is not affiliated with any for-profit or nonprofit organization. Preservation standards, visual compatibility factors, and design standards established in the City of Savannah zoning ordinance are the basis for evaluating the compatibility of changes and new development. The board cannot consider criteria not specifically identified within the ordinance. Items such as landscaping, parking availability, traffic, noise, and impact on property values are not within the board's purview and cannot be a factor in the issuance or denial of a certificate of appropriateness. Personal preferences will not be the basis for any decision. Signposting. Members of the board receive packages containing applications in the week before the meeting and individually visit sites of the projects. If a project is not properly posted, it is removed from the agenda and rescheduled. Were there any projects that were not posted this month? Hearing none, we will move on to the consent agenda. These agenda items have been found by the preservation officer to be in accordance with the preservation standards, visual compatibility factors, and design standards, and have apparent consensus with no known objections from the public. Is there a member of the public or a board member who wishes to remove any items from the consent agenda to the regular agenda?
Madam Chair, I would like to pull 501 East Huntington Street, which is 24-001182 COA, to the regular agenda, as well as 128 East Taylor Street, 24-006553 COA.
Thank you, Mr. Higgins. There's a motion on the floor to move items number 2 and 5 on the printed agenda to remove them from consent agenda to regular agenda. Do I have a second?
Nagel, second.
Thank you, Ms. Nagel. We'll do a voice vote. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? All right. The consent agenda minus items number 2 and 5 is approved. 2 and 5 will move on to the regular agenda. Adoption of the agenda. Is there a motion for approval of the agenda as presented with the changes in the last motion?
Higgins, so moved.
Thank you, Mr. Higgins. Is there a second?
Second, Thompson.
Thank you, Mr. Thompson. I'll do a voice vote. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, the motion to approve the agenda has been approved and is passed. We will skip over approval of minutes as they have not been presented, and that will move on to the February 12th agenda. We do have an item that has been requested to be removed from the final agenda. That is item number 16, and that is a request from the City of Savannah. That item will be continued to the February 12th agenda. Moving on to the continued agenda, we have 4 items on the continued agenda. The petition file 24-004958 COA for 20 through 24 East Oglethorpe, file number 24-006114 COA for 8 through 10 East Broughton Street, file number 24-005979 COA for 630 Indian Street, and file number 24-006554 COA for 601 Indian Street. Can I have a motion to approve the continued agenda?
Higgins, so moved.
Thank you, Mr. Higgins. Is there a second?
Thompson, second.
Thank you, Mr. Thompson. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? The motion to approve the continued agenda has been approved and has passed. Moving on to the regular agenda, staff will present the application with a recommendation. The petitioner will then have the opportunity to respond to the recommendations. We ask the petitioner limit their presentation to 10 minutes or less and only address items identified as inconsistent with the ordinance or questions raised by this board. The public will then have the opportunity to comment, after which the petitioner may respond to public comment. I know that we have a full house today. I think I have a pretty good idea of the item number you are all interested in. I would just ask that if your public comment is the same as the person who has come before you, you resign your time. All of the public comments that were submitted to staff are now a matter of public record and have been read by this board. So if you want to talk amongst yourself and nominate someone to speak collectively on your behalf. Otherwise, if people come up and say the same thing over and over again, I'll start kind of cutting people off so that we can move on. Certainly want to make sure that you're heard, but I think your showing up here today speaks volumes for your concern for the agenda item you're here to speak on. After public comment, the board will go into board discussion, at which point no further testimony is received unless specifically requested of and granted by the chairwoman. We will structure board discussion by going around to each board member two times. For comment, you do not have to provide comment if you do not have any. If you are joining us virtually, please locate your control panel. Public that wishes to submit comment, please use the raise your hand feature. And if you're with us here in person, make sure you sign in at the door. And when you come up to the microphone, please state your name for the record. We ask that you keep your comments to 3 minutes or less.
Madam Chair?
Yes, sir.
Question for clarification. Are we going to do the two items pulled from the consent agenda at the beginning of the regular agenda or the end?
I'm going to drop them on the end if that's agreeable with my fellow board members. Okay. First item up on the regular agenda is the petition of LS3P, file number 24-004957 COA for 301 Tatnall Street. New construction part one, height and mass.
So as already stated, the applicant is requesting approval for part one, height and mass for large scale development at 301 Tatnall Street. As you all remember, this project was heard back at the October HDBR meeting. Original submittal packet seen here on my left with the update plans on the right. So the project at the time received a number of public comments in opposition to it. The board also raised concerns about the project to include the overall height of the building as well as its design. The board chose to continue the project to give the applicant time to address concerns. Again, what you see on the left, what was previously submitted, what's seen on the right is what the applicant provided to staff. The staff still does have several concerns with this project. A major one, of course, is the height. The applicant has reduced the overall stories from 5 to 6 to 4 to 5 stories. They've also reduced the floor to ceiling heights and the overall height of elements such as the parapet. Staff still has concerns about the overall height, given that so many of the surrounding contributing buildings are residential in nature and smaller in size. It's worth noting that in the immediate area, there's 1 3-story contributing building and numerous 2.5-story buildings with raised basements. It's also worth noting that reducing the floor to ceiling heights, the second floor no longer meets the standards. It should have a 12-foot expression. It's currently 10 feet. So the applicant will need to address that as well. Staff would also like the board's opinion on the rhythm of solves and voids on the front facade. You'll see in the connector, see a little bit right here, it's kind of like solid, you know, solid windows. And this is something you don't see in the immediate vicinity because it's predominantly residential, but you do see it in those larger kind of contributing buildings down Liberty Street to include Drain Tower. So staff just wants the board's opinion on whether or not this could be a visually compatible element. And the final area of concern on behalf of staff is with the window pairings. So per the standards, exterior building walls, so use groupings, including curtain walls, columns, and or plasters, create multiple bays, no less than 15 feet and no more than 20 feet in width. While the majority of the sections do meet that, there are some that do not. The board can choose to vary the standard if they find it to be visually compatible. But again, in the immediate areas, predominantly residential, so you don't see this type of pairings as much. So again, those were the staff's primary concerns. Everything else is discussed in the staff report. With that, staff recommends a continuance of Part 1 heightened mass for a large scale development at 301 Tatnall Street to give the applicant time to address the following concerns. Those are shown on the screen. And just as a quick comment, staff noted minor error in condition 4. Staff report says 10 to 20 feet, and it should say 15 to 20 feet. With that, does the board have any questions or concerns?
Thank you, Kelly. Mr. Thompson?
What are the two numbers that changed? I didn't quite pick that up.
It's right here. The staff report says 10 to 20 feet. It should be 15 to 20 if the board wants that.
Okay, thank you.
And in discussions with the applicant, especially with regard to your first reason for wanting a continuance, was there much headway made in the lowering of height? Since that was quite important to the board, and I thought we made it quite clear to the applicant, and doesn't see in your discussions with them.
Yeah, so when staff brought it up with the applicant, it sounded like the applicant believed that these were met because they reduced it by one story on each side, and as well as reduce the overall height by reducing the floor to ceiling heights. So they believed it was met. The staff still did have concerns. But of course, the applicant can, you know, provide more information as needed.
And in putting forth your reasons for a continuance, do you believe that there will be more headway made with regard to point one?
I mean, I would hope, but again, it's all up to the applicant.
I have a question, Nagel. With trying to reduce that height, and they've lowered the standard height of the floor under 12, which it needs to be, then that brings up the need for an exception. So before last meeting, that wasn't the case, so we didn't bring up the need for an exception for that. But now that would come into discussion of that exception would actually be needed in order to even consider the less than 12 height. Situation.
And that's only for the second story as well. The upper stories are allowed, I believe, 10 feet, which was met. So it's just that second story. So.
Thank you.
Woodfield, comment, please. Did you discuss with the applicant this half story in the back part of or the south part of the project where it doesn't meet the ground story height?
So I look predominantly at how it reads from Tatnall and Liberty Street and didn't pay as much attention to that. But that's a concern. Definitely should address it with the applicant.
And just to put into the record, can you clarify what the number of feet in height a story makes?
I was informed that it had to be a minimum of 4 feet. Any other questions?
Are there additional questions for staff?
The applicant is here as well.
Thank you, Kelly. Would the petitioner please come forward and state your name for the record?
Good afternoon. Michael Garcia representing LS3P. So thank you to staff and to the board for taking time today to review.
Oh, excuse me.
Yes.
You're not allowed to use thumb drives on our system.
I've used it last time I was here.
Doesn't run it through our IT, please.
Okay. While IT is helping me with the PDFs that I brought over today, I did want to address concerns of height with regards to our resubmission. We did lower the building, like Kelly mentioned, a whole story in the 5-4 category. So we are now truly a five-story and four-story building. With regards to the other floor that is 5'4", that is considered a mezzanine. It's under 30% of the overall floor area. And in the ordinance, the mezzanine is not considered a story. So we are within still a 4-story building range. And the visual expression on the exterior is only 3 feet with the windows and the subfloor. So I can show you that once the PDFs are available. I did also want to address discussions within the report regarding our overall height and the conditions we were continued with. It is true that you, members of the board, a few of you did discuss 3 to 4 stories within that. And it was, as the report says, its members suggested that the building be brought down to 3 to 4 stories. But nowhere in the report or in the motion for the continuances were we bound to 3 to 4 stories. So I'll be quite frank, at 3 to 4 stories, this project does not work. And as the height map does say, I know it is at the discretion of the language that it shall be permitted to be 5 and 4 stories. However, to be held to that while it's not part of our conditions, I do think is a disadvantage and hardship to us as the petitioner and to my client. I think also it wholeheartedly sets a dangerous precedent for developers and property owners that are reliant on these height maps and the ordinances that we provide, because no developer, and my client as well, wouldn't purchase a property if they're not able to maximize it to their extent. So I do think that that is something that I'm interested to hear discussion on, simply because it's counter to what a prescriptive map is providing us. So I will go through some of the other changes or other conditions. With regards to condition 2 and our connector and the visual expression of the storefront, in my 10 years working here, we've always been told when we're providing connectors or any sort of hyphen for a project, the language of the hyphen is supposed to architecturally be differentiated. So I do understand that we did go past the 20-foot mark when it came to the spans of our window storefront. So I did provide today alternative storefront configurations that do meet the standard. I still do wholeheartedly believe it does need to differentiate itself from the rest of the language of the building, especially since it is so pushed back within the building mass. As far as the windows on the storefront on the fifth floor, that was our attempt to further help differentiate the fifth story, which was one of the previous conditions given to us. I'm happy to change the storefront configurations to match the bottom stories as well. These are easy fixes for us. And I did also want to address the bay spacing requirement. After further discussions with Ms. Mitchell, an email asking for further clarifications of which bay spacing she was referring to, she was referring to along Jefferson Street, these two particular bays. Here, this one was reading as 20'8", and this one was reading as 24'8" as well. Since then, we've been able to rectify that situation, and now they do comply within that. I did also want to kind of speak to the mezzanine once again. I understand it does say 5'4". I did not bring the floor plan for it. I was reliant on them, on staff providing the floor plan for that, but I don't think they included it in their presentation. If I'm not mistaken. No, they did not. But it is a mezzanine. It does comply to be under 15% of the overall floor area. So we do not count it as a story. And I did clarify that with the city of Savannah as well. With regards to visual compatibility and height, I do understand that this has been the main contention with this project. As I look through the staff report, once again, I did want to call out the discrepancy with the fact that we are being held to a standard of 3 to 4 stories, though that was not part of our conditions. And if that was part of our conditions back in October, we'd be having a very different conversation today. But visual compatibility is 12 criteria. You have height and scale, materials, signs, direction of elevation, front elevations. We are being told in the staff report that we meet 10 of the 12 criteria, and we're being held to 2 as the predominant reasons why we are not considered visually compatible. I understand that all of the buildings in this area are 2 and 3.5 and 3 story structures that are contributing, but once again, this is new development. It is a new point of history. We are not always going to be held to that same standard. And I do think that changing the 5 and 4 story ability of this lot is a dangerous precedent for future redevelopment. And as many of the letters have suggested, this is a precedent for future redevelopment of the Civic Center area. So to create that precedent here today, I do have to call into question how it'll affect all of that as well. I'm open for questions.
Thank you, Mr. Garcia. Are there questions for the petitioner?
Sorry, one second. And to answer your question, numerically, we lowered it by not only a story, but overall it was lowered 16 and a half feet. Sorry.
That's okay. Thank you. Questions for the petitioner?
I have one. Higgins, you mentioned that it would be a hardship if you could not have this project at 4 to 5 stories. Please explain the hardship.
I didn't say hardship, sir. I said the project wouldn't be viable. We wouldn't.
Specifically said hardship.
I did not mean to use that word. I think I said hardship when discussing the fact that we were being held to 3 to 4 stories, but it was not part of our conditions. At 3 to 4 stories, the project, we already went down to 94 rooms. At 3 to 4 stories, we would lose another 23 rooms. The client is here today and he will speak as well. We are trying to, you know, I'm trying to be a good steward of design with this project. I'm trying to move forward within the conditions that we've set forth, that we've been given and set forth. I think we met the conditions of the previous COA that we received and that was signed by staff and by the director of historic preservation. And at a loss of 23 rooms just is not a quality product for this area. Everybody's very concerned about the type of brand for the hotel and all of that. And we're trying our best to make sure that this is a high quality brand and that a loss of 23 rooms, the ability to create that is not. And I know that you guys obviously can't discuss hotel use. That's been discussed or that's been said already, but that is something that is worth mentioning.
Question, Higgins, is that a model? Is that a current model?
Yeah, that's an updated model.
While the model is being passed around, if there are additional questions for the petitioner, now is the time to ask.
Woodfield, I do have a question, please. I'm very confused about what you're calling a subfloor guest room area. Mm-hmm. Why is that not considered a floor?
So as the ordinance reads, the visual expression of a subfloor is supposed to be under 4 feet. We're visually showing windows up to 3 feet, and as well, the subfloor is technically also a mezzanine. It's under 15% of the overall floor area. So it does not count as a stories.
So can you please explain to me how these windows are matching the ground?
So we're going to be, there's
inches above the ground?
We're going to be cutting out openings for light, so it'll be light wells coming down into it as well. There's only 10 rooms on that floor or on that mezzanine.
So at each window, there's going to be a cutout in the ground to let light down. And mm-hmm. How tall is the overall window?
The window is 6 foot. So it would be a 3 to 4 foot cutout.
So how does this light well relate to your setback on the property line?
So along the south end of our property, we are over 5 feet away. So it would be within our property. We would have to apply for an encroachment permit along the right of way. On Jefferson and Tadnall.
How wide or deep is the light well?
We haven't gotten into the specifics of that, but I would say probably 2 feet. It's not much different than what you would see with typical light wells walking down Congress Street or any of that area.
Do you have an egress issue with that?
No, because we provide 2 proper forms of egress and the windows are still operable.
So the edge of the light well will be how far from the sidewalk or property line?
We haven't gotten into the specifics of that, but we would make it to be complying with egress standards.
Yeah. Okay.
Are there additional questions for staff?
Nagel, just one last clarification on the height of that mezzanine. You just said it was how tall?
So the mezzanine is 10 feet from the second level. It's elevated from the ground floor 5'4".
5'4".
Yes, but it's a
mezzanine. From the ground level.
but it's a mezzanine and it's under 30% of the overall floor area, so it does not count as a story. That is really
even though it is four, the ordinance states it's 4 feet is 4 feet and above is considered a story
for basements. It's above. It's not a basement.
Okay. Thank you.
Woodfield again, please. So are you saying that this mezzanine level of 10 feet tall with these full height windows, you're not considering a story?
It's only on one side of the building and it is under 15% of the overall floor area. It per the ordinance that accounts for not to be considered a story. Staff could help me clarify this if they're able to.
It's a 71 foot wide elevation. It certainly looks like a story.
Jonathan, can staff weigh in on the reading of the ordinance and the interpretation?
And the floor plans, your chance.
I'm not sure if we can pull them up. Okay. Yes. So in terms of the exterior expression, let's see if we can zoom in here. I think staff's interpretation would be that it reads as a under 4 feet. It does not read. I think what Michael is getting to is the city, which is separate from the MPCs.
The MPC ordinance says that.
I know, I'm just saying, but you had spoken to someone at the city about this. Yes. In terms of, so yes, it would technically not be a story.
Because of the height or the percentage or both?
Combination, I believe. Mr. Coleman is probably more of an expert on this than anybody here, so he may want to weigh in.
Okay. Thank you. Are there additional questions for the petitioner? Thank you, Mr. Garcia.
Thank you.
Is there a member of the public that would like to comment? We just ask that you keep your comments to 3 minutes or less and state your name for the record.
My name is Steve Edwards, and I represent the Downtown Neighborhood Association. I'd like to make a few points about the presentation. One is I need to remind the petitioner that the height map is separate from the visual compatibility requirements. You have to meet the visual compatibility requirements in addition to the height map.
Keep going.
Oh, thank you. The other thing is that although there are, they may have met 10 of the 12 visual compatibility requirements, all of them have to be met under the ordinance. And as a general matter, I think it's useful to restate the requirements of the visual compatibility standard. The ordinance requires, and I'll read very quickly here, that the overall height of a building and the height of individual components of a building or structure shall be visually compatible to the contributing buildings and structures to which it is visually related. And visually related is defined as buildings and structures that are within view of the proposed structure. As they admit, the visually related contributing buildings are all under three stories. And I think that it's fairly clear that what we've seen here, which Mr. Houle described in the original presentation as a behemoth, is not visually related. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Edwards.
Andrew Jones, Oglethorpe Plan Coalition. I agree with all of Mr. Edwards' comments. Please deny this updated application because the height and mass are not visually compatible with that of the historic contributing buildings within view. That's the basic issue today. In addition, this new proposed pit with submerged windows is also not visually compatible with any building within view. The applicant hasn't cited a single building with that formation, a single contributing building with that formation. And then the applicant is complaining about your recommendation for the 3 to 4 stories. Remember, we were all there at that hearing. The applicant asked for that guidance. You provided that guidance, and now the applicant is completely disregarding the guidance that you gave him after he asked for it. In addition, the DNA and the Oglethorpe Plan Coalition met with the architect, and we do appreciate that opportunity. We made a number of suggestions, none of which are reflected here. The strategy clearly is to wear you down. You've seen this before. Come to you, argue, and then get a continuance and come back and disregard everything that you said the last time with the hope that maybe by the second or third time, you'll just give up. Please do not give up. You've seen what the public has said. So I think in this case, because your advice has been completely disregarded, that you need to deny this application and not continue it in order to send a strong message. And there were comments about the viability of this project. The viability of this project is not a permissible factor for you to consider as a matter of law. You are simply supposed to provide the criteria in the overlay, such as visual compatibility. Whether this is a viable project or not is not something that you can consider. So I request that you please deny, not continue, but deny this project. Thank you very much.
Hello. Good afternoon, everyone. Lori Broyles. I own two contributing structures on the same street as this proposed project, 331 Barnard and 333 Tatnall Street. I would just like to clarify a point and to the questioning received by the board as to this partially subterranean floor that is not being counted as a floor in the southernmost volume presented on the plans. Petitioner is saying it does not count as a floor because it's a mezzanine, and a mezzanine is not a floor. I will just read for the record that under the zoning ordinance, a mezzanine is an intermediate level between the floor and ceiling of a story. Okay. So it has to be between two stories. This is between the basement, which does not count as a story, and the first floor, okay? Its aggregate floor area is not more than one-third of the area of the room or space in which it is located. Well, I think that the definition speaks for itself, and it's obvious what is being called a mezzanine is not a mezzanine. And in fact, the governing rule here is what is called a basement or crawl space. A crawl space or a partial basement. And again, this is in the zoning ordinance, the height requirements. A crawl space or partial basement that is 4 feet or less above grade shall not count as a story. As you've pointed out, this is 5 feet, 4 inches, a partial basement, 5 feet, 4 inches above grade. So that is a story. So common sense tells us, looking at the plans, this is a story. The zoning ordinance tells us this is a story. And for someone to stand up here after the clear directive they received in October and to try to present this to you as being conforming with your comments and feedback in any way is ludicrous. Thank you.
Ellie Isaacs, Director of Preservation for Historic Savannah Foundation. Please excuse my voice if it changes throughout this because I've been sick. So HSF's ARC agrees with staff's recommendation of a continuance with the four conditions listed. We are concerned that the board's previous decision, conditions, and comments were not taken into consideration as much as they could have been. In agreement with staff's first condition, the proposed height and massing is not visually compatible with the surrounding context. Although the height has been reduced from the previous submission, it is still by definition and visually expressed at 6 stories on the southern volume due to the partial subground first floor and the rooftop. The height of the hotel still dwarfs the contributing residential structures to the east, creating what feels like another barrier. As reiterated from our previous statement in October, we recognize that the design of this building will impact and set a precedent for the new construction that will take place across the street at the Civic Center location. We recognize that that use cannot be a factor in your decision-making process today. However, HSF wants to be on record again stating that as a community, we need to focus more on development for housing and not additional hotels. We as a community and you all as members of the review board must continue to demand better instead of worrying that our standards will cause less development. the right people will not be deterred and will see this as a challenge to create better, more compatible and sensitive designs. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Isaacs. Is there another member of the public who wishes to speak? Just state your name for the record, sir.
David Longwood. I live at 301 Tatnall Street, which is about 300 feet from this hotel. I have issues that it has not reduced since the last time. When you take the actual measurements of the building height versus lines that they show as the building height, which they're showing, if you look, I can't get to the plans, but they show the height as the top of the window on the fifth floor. And that's not the building height. The actual drop in the building is 11 feet. They didn't do what you guys recommended and asked. It's still massive. And the renderings, trying to create an impression of how this building is going to look. If you look at the bottom left rendering, they show the building next door, which is three and a half stories, equaling four stories on the hotel. How can that be? The dimensions are not the same. And if you look at the model, the building is almost as high as the parking garage. We're not getting anywhere with this. We're still continuing with an oversized building. You see that model? That white block is almost as high as the parking garage visually. And visually is what we're talking about here, not actual. But if you look at the drawings and you look at the way they've drawn the space lines on dimensions, they don't go to the top of the building. They go to the ceiling height on the fifth floor. Well, that doesn't work. That's all I got to say.
Thank you. Is there another member of the public who wishes to speak?
I'm Sheldon Tenenbaum, and I live at 411 Tatnall Street, three blocks down from the proposed hotel. I'm really here to comment more on the consequences of allowing a height mass variance. When this hotel will have 100-plus rooms if you allow the variance, there is absolutely no captive parking in the hotel. The understanding is it has to use the city garage behind us, behind the where it's proposed, which is already full on most days. And certainly when there are events in the arena, in the Civic Center or in the redone Mercer Theater, is no parking. That's 100 rooms if you allow it, plus staff, plus a restaurant. You'll have visitors to the hotel. The only people that will benefit from this are the developers, the lawyers who represent them, the builders, okay? Those of us who live there get negatively impacted in perpetuity with traffic and parking problems, in perpetuity. And that's why it is critical that you deny this variance. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Tenenbaum. Just as a reminder, the scope of this board and basis for decision, we cannot take into consideration parking, noise, traffic. All of that is outside of our purview. We're simply interpreting the design standards and visual compatibility. So if your comments could relate to the things that this board has the authority to weigh in on, it would be helpful and appreciated. Ms. Wood.
Artis Wood, resident. With regard to the lot coverage, I'm looking at that model, and everything around it seems to be less impactful, and there's more space. It seems like our developers continually try and get every square inch on a lot and shorten things like the tree lawns or whatever. We've got to stop allowing that. And so I would say, especially in this situation, the mass is definitely overdone. You make a little less, but you can still make a profit in most of our land. But don't kill the goose that's so enjoyable for everybody. And I do second the motion of Ms. Isaacs, which reminds us that the concern, and it's not yours, but we must pass it on to the leadership of Savannah, that the concern of having so many hotels, we have to stop this. We have to say zoning needs to be a little more residential in kind. The last thing we need is more commercial and especially hotels in our historic districts. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Wood.
My name is Sandy Everett. I've lived here, I came as a teenager. I've lived here 65 years. I've seen what Historic Savannah has saved, this incredible beauty of our whole city, including parks out in the outside. But what started Historic Savannah was an ugly parking lot. I mean, a beautiful parking lot that was replaced with an ugly parking lot. Here we are. I mean, if it weren't for those seven ladies, we might have parking lots in all of these squares. If we continued with these box buildings, ugly box buildings and hotels, please consider the locals who live here, who love the city, love the beauty of the city. Thank you, O.C. Welch, for making Bacon Park beautiful, for Lake Mayor, for Daffin Park, the little parks in Ardsley, Hull Park. We need more affordable housing in this city. We need Yamacraw Village saved. We need local housing. I've had six family members move in with me. I love them dearly. I love that they're there. They can't afford to rent in Savannah, Georgia. Thank you very much for listening to me. I'm sorry.
Thank you.
Everyone said it all.
If you can just state your name for the record, please.
Susan Colgrove, and I'm on 212 West Harris Street. And visually in my courtyard, and my garage, which is low, it's not even, well, it's probably a two-story if you cut it in half. I look out there, or I look out my parlor across one set of houses, and right now, at least I have some airspace there, okay? If it was two or three stories, I could still see the sky. As soon as this building gets up, I've lost that. There is nothing. And we use our courtyards and our homes look out the second floor or third floor windows. In 10 years, when I came, there was discussion on the same issue with another hotel. And I fought with Historic Savannah Foundation and next door, people around there, the Beehive Foundation, who own three houses on Harris Street. Same issues, lawyers. Why are we still coming back over these last 10 years? It's been brought up to this board, also to the next board up. Another one went to that level. They don't get through. They don't come back. And then another hotel comes in. We heard in the middle of these 10 years that somebody else was coming. They never came to fruition. And now we have another one. And the view that you see there and the heights, it has not changed. I don't believe there was a subterranean floor, okay, before. But the fronts, the sides, if you look at this, where do people, I know parking, but they just stop at the door, well, and let their bags off. Our drive, which is Liberty Street, behind Liberty Street, where emergency vehicles go through, garbage goes through, what happened, is right by where this is all being built up. It was before. So I just say, can we just stop this and end this and vote that we want residential there, similar to what we have? Thank you.
Thank you. Is there another member of the public who wishes to speak? Would the petitioner like to respond to public comment? Just be sure to state your name for the record, sir.
Sure. Hi, my name is William Gullion. I'm the Vice President of Design and Construction for RO Hotel Groups. We are the owner of the property. Just wanted to state that we're a quality hotel development and management company. We've been in business for over 50 years. It's a family-owned business, one of the largest family-owned privately held family-owned hospitality management companies in the United States. We're dedicated to an unwavering integrity that fosters partnership and relationships with our communities. We do a lot of community development. We provide 1% of our profit back into the community. We do 1% of our product back into the community, and we provide 1% of our personnel to help out with community services. We're very dedicated to making sure we provide a solution and a product that everyone's going to be happy with, and we want to be good neighbors. I came down in December, and we had a meeting with the community members. The conversations, while there was some about the height and mass, basically just went into more of a talking about parking, security, noise, and operations. And according to the governance and the directive of this group, you know, they asked us to lower the height of the building, which is what we did. We lowered it by an entire floor. I don't know if a lot of people know that this project was approved in 2018. It was the same ownership group, same company. And we did get approved for a 5- and 6-story building. However, COVID interrupted our development of that project. And so we had to start all over in this process. We originally did submit for the 6-story added story, bonus story, and we have agreed that we wouldn't be doing that. We've lowered the building 16 feet, 6 inches as requested by the last continuance. We've differentiated the upper level floors. And so all the recommendations and conditions that we were asked to do, we've actually addressed them in this new submittal, outside of the noise and things that were not part of the mass and height study. So the overall continuance never did prescribe 3 or 4 stories. It just said we lower the height of the building. So if we're going off the paperwork that we received and that we got from the city, it just said lower the height of the building. It didn't prescribe one type of level or how far to drop the floors. If we're not allowed to do 4 or 5, then the key count would be too low for us to get a brand of any substantial sort of quality, and we want to definitely do something higher quality. We'd like to be in, we would consider ourselves something that would compete with a Perry Lane or something like that in terms of high quality hotels. And that's what we would intend. The restaurant would be a high end restaurant, be usable by the neighborhood. And that's pretty much it for me.
Thank you.
Thank you.
At this time, we will enter into board discussion and no further public comment will be accepted. Mr. Higgins, I'll start with you.
About 2 weeks ago, I went to my accountant's office. It's a block away from this, and stood in front of his office and looked toward the space, looked at the contributing buildings around it, and in no way can I find this visually compatible with any of those buildings that I stood in front of. We, at the last meeting where this was discussed, we offered guidance. We did not set rules or statements as to what it should be. We don't design these projects for these people. They design them, but we offer guidance. And I feel that we gave them guidance that was not considered. I will just flat out say I do not support a continuance. I support denial.
Thank you, Mr. Higgins. Mr. Thompson?
I didn't think of that, but I think that makes sense to me, too, denial. Because in order to comply with comments that we received, the builder slash owner would have to build something for some other reason, I suspect. It won't be a hotel. It would be some other thing. Perhaps fairly big, but maybe not this particular plan. So to continue this as a non-starter doesn't make sense, but to deny it and have it go back to the drawing board to me does, because the option to comply with the ordinance as all of us might see it is something not a hotel.
Ms. Rowan?
I agree with the 2 previous comments.
I just want to caution my fellow board members when giving comments and evaluation criteria, the use of a building is not something that we are to consider, even if it is part of the public comment. We are bound by preservation standards, design standards, and the City of Savannah ordinance. So I just want to, for future comments and maybe when we come back around again, that can be further clarified. But Mr. Coleman, I'll lend to you.
Yes, I'm sensitive to everything that's been said relative to the height of the building. But as an architect who understands the complexities of trying to pull all this together and the issue of the height being a matter, I'm not convinced with the building that's on the southern portion any more than any of the rest of you are. But I also feel that a continuous is in order, that the designer should be given an opportunity to deal with the articulation and way this building looks. The height map does matter. It doesn't mean that someone can build to the height map, but they should be given an opportunity to do something that it successfully works within the massing. If we are trying to create buildings that are absolutely visually compatible to everything that's surrounding, we'll never be successful, because a three-story building that is takes over the entire city, this city cannot be monolithic in that way. We have a city that is alive. These buildings that we are going through right now are someday going to be buildings that will be 50 years old or greater, and someone will be looking at what were we doing and how are we looking at making this city continue to be alive and show that we were stewards of not only what was in the past, but everything moves forward. So I think that there's work to be done with this design, but to flat out say that the architect has failed, I don't think is where we are, and that we need to open our minds a little bit to that everything can't be the same, because visual compatibility is not appropriate totally here, because if you look at the residential work that's being done around the city, it's just as massive. It takes up the same space. It has the same issues that these developers have. They have to get rooms and spaces in them. That means mass. So whatever the use is, you're going to always be dealing with that. So we need to open our minds to what the realities of getting the best compromise out of these buildings are that we can be proud of, and not always a shorter building is the best building. It hasn't been proven in my whole lifetime in Savannah that every lower building is a good building. I can't pick too many. So that's my comment here, that I think that we need to pull some of the emotions out and understand that we have a duty to this entire city beyond just the persons who live around it, but the entire city. Every one of us here is a resident.
Thank you, Mr. Coleman. Ms. Nagel?
I think that we shouldn't think of this project as, you know, whether Savannah should change or improve, or we should be more open to things. We need to stick to the ordinances. We need to stick to the standards. The truth of this matter is the visual compatibility factor standard criteria is not met. 10 out of 12 isn't 12. We can't partially meet the standard. We have to fully meet the standard. Visual compatibility is not met because none of the buildings within view of this that are contributing structures are this tall. Therefore, it doesn't meet it in visual compatibility standards. The only one that does is the parking garage. The parking garage is not a contributing structure. Therefore, it doesn't fall within the standard. Only contributing structures do. So if we just put aside the use, if we put aside what we think Savannah should go towards or what we would like to see, it doesn't matter. The visual compatibility factor is not met. And we are here as a board to make sure the ordinances are respected and met. So I just think that that's a very simple matter. I think comparing it, I think the petitioner compared it to the Perry Lane, again, back to the fact that contributing buildings around the Perry Lane are within view. Therefore, it meets the standard. But this one doesn't have any, except the non-contributing garage. I think public comment in this case is very important. I think over 120 people in the community stood up, came, showed up, and I actually think they did their research. I think their points are valid and fair, and I think they're objective. So I do think we should consider them as part of the community who did their research. I don't think they need to be dismissed just because they don't like hotels. That is pretty much what I have to say about this. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Nagel. Ms. Woodfield?
I agree with very nice presentation there. I still come back to the fact that this is not visually compatible. The scale is very large for this location. And I can't approve it. I just feel like it's just not appropriate in this location.
Thank you, Ms. Woodfield. I'll go around one more time, Mr. Higgins.
I guess my only added point, currently there's a building being built on Oglethorpe that when it came before this board was this huge monolithic thing that had no relationship to the surrounding contributing buildings. We continued it. The architect met with the public, met with members of staff, dramatically changed their design. So then it was very visually compatible with the surrounding contributing buildings. We're seeing none of those actions here. We've given an opportunity. And I go by what I previously said. I cannot support this.
Thank you, Mr. Higgins. Mr. Thompson?
Well, I guess the chairman's comments were directed at me for mentioning use, but my
just
point
in general,
pardon me?
Just in general.
Yeah, well, my point wasn't to dictate or discuss the use. The point was if there's a building that will meet what we're hearing the public asking for, it probably won't be a hotel, which is a whole different thing. Even the person that spoke representing the projects basically said that it wasn't viable at a smaller building. And so we can give them another chance or we could tell them to go home and start over. I don't know which the board feels about that. So
thank you, Mr. Thompson. Ms. Rowan?
It's tough, but, it's just fact that it's so much larger than all the contributing buildings around it. And, the public has spoken, and facts are facts. And I just think that we have to respect that it's too large in scale compared to all the other surrounding buildings. So.
Thank you, Ms. Rowan. Mr. Coleman?
Yes, I want to be clear that there's no dismissal of any of the commentary made by the public on my part. I'm expressing an opinion just as each and every one of you have. But at the same time, I think that giving the designers the opportunity to come back after hearing all of this and really putting some muscle to this is an appropriate solution and not to just outright deny it. That's my point.
Want to add, Nagel, that we did do that at the last hearing. We did exactly that. So we did give them an opportunity to come back. And then it came back with different problems but none of the ones that we actually were asking for. So this is a comeback.
Thank you, Ms. Nagel. Ms. Woodfield?
No further comments. Visual compatibility is, I think, scale is the issue here.
Thank you, Ms. Woodfield. I'll just close out comments by asking fellow board members to consider when making a motion, if the motion is to continue or to deny, and just with motions in general, especially when visual compatibility is a factor, to be very specific in the conditions of the motion so that the applicant has clarity what they're being asked to come back with, if that is what we're asking to do. And I think, Ms. Nagel, some of the confusion with the applicant is the conditions and the discussion that was had was not included in the wording of the motion. And so that is what they're governed by when they resubmit and redesign. So if there is something very specific, such as number of stories, that should be included as a condition when a motion is made. And I will open the floor for a motion.
Higgins. With regard to 301 Tatnall Street, 24-004957 COA, I move the Savannah Historic District Board of Review deny the application as this project is not visually compatible in height and mass to the contributing buildings to which it is visually related.
Thank you, Mr. Higgins. There's a motion on the floor to deny based on visual compatibility, specifically with height and mass with visually related buildings. Is there a second?
Nagel, second.
Thank you, Ms. Nagel. Mr. Higgins, how do you vote?
Aye.
Mr. Thompson?
Aye.
Ms. Rowan?
Aye.
Mr. Coleman?
Nay.
Ms. Nagel?
Aye.
Ms. Woodfield?
Aye.
The ayes have it. That motion is denied. I'm going to take a two-minute brief recess to allow the crowd that has amassed to speak solely on that matter the opportunity to leave. You are certainly welcome to stay. Thank you for that brief recess. We will reconvene with item number 15 on the regular agenda, the petition of Buck Lindsay, file number 24-006105-COA for 411 West Bay Street.
Good afternoon, Jonathan Mellon. The next application on the agenda is 411 West Bay Street, 24-006105-COA. As the chair noted, it's the petition of Lindsay Pope Brayfield and Associates, Buck Lindsay. This is for proposed alterations to a non-contributing building. It's a building that I think we all know very well, right here on the corner of MLK and Bay. It was constructed about 20 years ago. We have the original architect here sitting right behind me. We can give you a lot more history on it. In a nutshell, there are two components to this project. I'm going to start with the first one. Right now you have a blank wall here, but you can see there's actually some recessed panels in the brickwork. What is being proposed is to add a storefront here. Sorry for the deal. The applicant is proposing a new storefront here, which would, we feel, work architecturally, be visually compatible, and then also just from an urban design point of view, help to activate the streetscape along Montgomery. So staff is recommending approval in that it meets the standards. The second component is that although this is a large building and it takes the entire block, it does a really nice job in terms of the rhythm and the breaking up of the massing of the building. In particular, at the top floor, in these two areas here, with these two recessed sections where there are outdoor balconies or patios, and then there's one in the rear elevation facing south. And I will show you that in a second here. What is being proposed, and it's easiest to just show you here in their submission. So I'm going to zoom in here. So as you can see here, this is the existing condition facing north on West Bay Street. These are those two recessed sections that I was talking about. What the applicant is proposing is to pull the facade to the north and remove the balconies. There will still be a setback to some degree. And it's more clearly seen on the rear elevation. This is facing south, but it's quite visible. As you all know, there's a parking lot behind it. So you get a full view, actually, of probably more people. I think the architect said this to me the other day. More people actually see the rear elevation than the front elevation, because when you're in Bay, you're either driving really fast or you're walking, you're looking, the sidewalk is very narrow. But as you can see here, what's being proposed, same as on the front, is to remove the balcony, pull the facade up, still slightly set back, and infill the area. Staff discussed this quite a bit internally. Again, here are the two views. This is the front elevation with these two recessed sections at the top floor, and then the rear elevation, southern elevation, with this recessed section. So with that, staff's recommendation, again, as I just noted, is to approve that first component, the alterations to the side east elevation at the southeast corner, for the introduction of a new storefront as requested, because the work is visually compatible and meets the standards. However, we are recommending denial of the proposed alterations to the front and rear elevations of the sixth floor, because the work is not visually compatible within the context of the Bay Street corridor and the Savannah Downtown Historic District. Again, it's a question of massing. This is a non-contributing building, but we feel that the original design was very successful in terms of trying to break up the massing of a large building, and we just don't think that this is a wise alteration in that it makes it much more of a flat facade and less visually compatible. So that's pretty quick in a nutshell.
Thank you, Jonathan. Are there questions for staff on this one?
And the architect, Mr. Shea, is here, who can talk.
Perfect. Would the applicant please come forward and state your name for the record?
I'm just going to pull something up that the applicant submitted so he can have that.
Thank you, Jonathan. I'm Buck Lindsay, Lindsay Pope Brayfield Architects. We are the petitioners for this pair of improvements, pair being one on Montgomery Street, the retail conversion, and the other part of the pair is the balcony modifications. This building was actually built 30 years ago. I was the original design architect, and I collaborated with a local firm, Pat Shea, Gunn-Meyerhoff Shea. We have collaborated with that company on probably six or seven projects in downtown Savannah over the years. We have a very successful collaboration. I'm going to introduce Pat Shea to make the detailed response to the petition. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Lindsay.
Thanks, Buck. Patrick Shea with Gunn-Meyerhoff Shea, or now we call it GM Shea Architects. And we're also joined here today by a representative from North Point Hospitality, Whip Triplett. A little brief history lesson, promise it's not long. 30 years ago, when this hotel was proposed, there had been just one other hotel in that era designed in Savannah, the Hampton Inn, as you know it today. And Buck Lindsay and I also collaborated on that one. When it came time to take on this corner, which is far, far away from the neighborhoods with the smaller homes that you've been contending with in the last petition, in the far corner of the historic district, there were criticisms of the Hampton Inn that it was too close to looking like a historic building. So when we took on the design of this one, we decided to make it more obviously of its own time. And I think we were successful in being able to do that. The proposed design that has come forward to you now, 30 years later, you know, hotels like this have a usable life it's time to give this hotel another generation of use. And part of what it's necessary in order to make that viable is the modification that's been proposed to you. We'd like to point out to you that the time this was done, there was no standard at that time like the ones that you've been quoting earlier today. It was a much earlier phase of the rules and regulations of visual compatibility. And at that time, there was very little said in the ordinance about having a street-level activated retail. So the client has, as a mitigation to some of the concerns, decided to put retail on that corner that's closest actually to City Market. Not going to be particularly profitable, but will be good for the streetscape, and they'd like to have at least some consideration of the fact that they are going to that that trouble. The balconies that are proposed to be removed over the years have proved to be non-functional. They're not good places for people to get out and look. They haven't been used in that particular way. When they came to me and they said, you know, gosh, we're running into some resistance, would you be willing, Pat, to try and help us out? I said, sure. And one of the things that I recommended was that where it was being infilled, I don't know, can you guys see the cursor on the screen? Yeah, where it was being infilled, that instead of having that be looking like more punched windows in a solid wall, to make that all glass so that it was read as being void rather than solid in the massing, to use the terminology within the ordinance. And then after discussing it with Jonathan the other day and finding out that that hadn't been enough mitigation to satisfy the staff, what I worked with the team was we would like to also introduce, it's not really color so much as it is just tint. I mean, we would like to be able to use something to be able to make the areas that are articulated now only by the recess at the top floor, where it's frankly very hard to read that from the street, by also introducing, making something that's much darker in tint, in shade than that. And you can see in this how it actually breaks up that massing into three segments much more effectively, frankly, than just the little cutout up at the roof level. And it also can be made to work on the rear elevation. I don't know if it is in here. We got to figure out how to make a little bit more of an edge right here, but also, again, to be able to break it up into what visually, and that's what we're here for, is visual compatibility, looks more like a building divided into two segments. So what we'd like to ask today is that you go ahead and make your motion to approve with the condition that we come back to staff and work out the final arrangement of the colors and take advantage of the opportunity to articulate the massing even further by using this technique. These are not, by the way, the exact final colors. These are renditions of what the existing colors are. We want to also come back and work with staff on coming up with a color scheme that's going to be as good or better than what the original color scheme was. But we'd like to work that out at a staff level. I think that's become the norm, that now when it comes down to the issue of color, that the board usually defers to the staff. So that's what we'd like to ask, that we, instead of getting part of the petition for the improvement of the massing in those areas denied, we'd like to get it approved with the condition that we come back and utilize this method and work it out with staff so that we can sort of have the best of both worlds. And with that, I'll make myself available for questions.
Thank you, Mr. Shea. Are there questions for the petitioner?
Higgins, I just have one simple one. So the darkening would be a paint or a stain as opposed to material change?
I think it's more likely to be something that is an application. I don't want to call it paint because of the existing finish is stucco. But it's not going to be a change in materiality as much as it is a change in the tint, you know, and we would explore color variations. There may frankly even be more contrast than what we've finally present. This is just something that I used this magic program called Blue Beam to create for the meeting today.
Additional questions for the petitioner? Thank you, Mr. Shea.
Mm-hmm.
Is there a member of the public that wishes to speak? We wore you out on the last one, I see. All right, since there isn't public comment, we will now enter into board discussion and no further comment will be accepted. Ms. Woodfield, I'll start with you.
To me, the massing is very important, that these buildings differentiate themselves and it doesn't become, you know, one big long block of big buildings. And I do believe when you look up at the skyline that the existing condition where the recess is deep and the parapet, the cornice line is broken, is important to separating these big masses into what looks like subdivided buildings. So I'm not in favor of bringing the balcony out because I think it does make the whole building look more horizontal and more massive.
Thank you, Ms. Woodfield. Ms. Nagel?
I agree with Ms. Woodfield. I don't have a problem with this because as it is already what it is. It's not a new build, and also it is in an appropriate location for what it is. But eliminating that setback on the top does eliminate some of that sunlight in the bottom at some point of the day. Bay Street being, you know, things hover over already. I'd be hesitant in that. I don't know how much, you know, I'm sure that the petitioner has great reasons to do so, but how much do they gain versus how much is lost in terms of that little bit of sunlight and that setback? But other than that, I don't have any further comment.
Thank you, Ms. Nagel. Mr. Coleman?
I think I somewhat agree with the reduction does diminish the impact of the offset. I don't know if it diminishes it in a way that totally destroys the aspect of breaking the building down, but it clearly is not the same building, but I don't know if it's negatively impacted, but I don't really have any major comment as to whether I think it's a good or bad move, really.
Thank you, Mr. Coleman. Ms. Rowan?
I don't think it negatively impacts the building. I mean, you're not really changing much. So that's my opinion. I think it's visually compatible in filling it.
Thank you, Ms. Rowan. Mr. Thompson?
I think I heard Mr. Shea suggest that instead of maintain the proposal, but instead of just stopping there, to use color or something to bring out the differentiation from the forward pieces of the thing. So that I could see that as offering that as a staff recommendation. I'm in favor of approving the ground level storefront is okay. I like that. But we could revise the denial to continuation on alternatives to meet the staff and board's point of view about breaking the building up.
Thank you, Mr. Thompson. Mr. Higgins?
I have no problem with the retail aspect of this. I kind of question whether the changing the color will create a whole different challenge. Because when I look at where it's darkened, it almost makes the center bay be more monolithic. I might Yeah, support continues. I'm not sure where they're trying to go with this. I'm not opposed, but I don't fully support.
I have just a question for clarification, because it seems like there's consensus on the retail portion of the application and not consensus on the balcony and the rhythm of changing the rhythm of the front facade of the building. We're not able to approve one part and continue a second, are we? Or how procedurally, how does that need to be handled?
The entire application and make them come back.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you. Ms. Woodfield, I'll go back around to you.
Thank you. Woodfield, I was just focusing on the top corners, and I still do feel that on Bay Street, that recess is a valuable thing to have. I agree. I'm not sure that just changing those vertical bays is going to give the same effect. It really will, in the end of the day, appear flatter. What I didn't mention or get into was the back elevation, where you suggested that maybe you just have a line of a different color finish. I don't think that's going to be, you know, I'm an architect myself. I think that's, you know, going to look like a painted on effect that you're trying to, you know, make it look better than it is. And I don't know that, I don't think it will be successful. So I don't think that's achieving the goal. Maybe it's a help, but I do think the recess on the West Bay Lane elevation is valuable to keep. The retail, I have no problem with. I think it's a great change. I appreciate that. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Woodfield. Ms. Nagel?
No further comment.
Mr. Coleman?
I am less concerned about the bringing out the bays on the front, as long as they don't project any further than the recess that's there. But the rear one, because there's really nothing to justify that change in it, I think I'm a little more bothered by bringing out the rear, because it doesn't give you any differentiation in the building itself, and it just makes that one flat plane, and I'm not sure color alone makes that work for me, but I'm not bothered by the Bay Street elevation.
Thank you, Mr. Coleman. Ms. Rowan?
No additional comments.
Mr. Thompson?
No additional comments, thanks.
Mr. Higgins? Thank you. At this time, I'll entertain a motion.
Higgins, with regard to 411 West Bay Street, which is 24-006105 COA, I move the Savannah Historic District Board of Review continue this motion to the, what's the date of the February meeting?
12th.
To February 12th, 2025, so that the applicant can continue to work with staff to clarify the alterations to the front and rear elevations and to differentiate. Let's just stop there, to continue to work with staff.
Okay, there's a motion on the floor to continue the petition to allow the applicant to continue to work with staff on the front and rear elevations. Do I have a second?
Both Coleman second.
Thank you, Mr. Coleman. Ms. Woodfield, how do you vote?
I'm confused. I think we were asked previously to be more specific in our direction. Do we think we need to give more direction, or just to continue it and work with staff?
The motion on the floor is to continue to work with staff on the front and rear elevation. If you wish to amend your motion, we can entertain an amended motion or continue on as is.
I really don't want to, because I think staff was ready to recommend denial, and if they can work with staff to where staff can support something, this is one where I really don't want to tie their hands that much.
You don't have to. I'm okay with the motion as is. If you would like to keep it as is and the second as is, we can proceed along with the vote. Ms. Woodfield, the vote is to you.
Aye.
Thank you. Ms. Nagel?
Aye.
Mr. Coleman?
Aye.
Ms. Rowan?
Aye.
Mr. Thompson?
Aye.
Mr. Higgins?
Aye.
That motion is continued to the February 12th meeting.
Thank you. I would just, note that the next item, if anybody's still here, 11 West Gordon is not going to be heard today. So we're going to move on to the following application. We'll get there. Very large packet. Promise.
Okay, so this is Kelly. That's project 132 East Bryan Street. The applicant is requesting to install both illuminated and non-illuminated signs. Just so the board is aware, staff was notified, I believe yesterday, that applicant does not want to include this wall-mounted sign at this time, so they do request that that be removed from the project. With that, staff did find that remaining two signs did meet the standards in every way. We're just putting that kind of standard language in there saying that if the project is across the street from residential units, that this internally lit sign be addressed. So either it's internal illumination or no illumination at all. Very simple. With that, staff does recommend approval. Again, these first two conditions were in reference to that wall-mounted sign, but we were notified last minute that these are still part of their approval. With that, does the board have any questions?
Questions for staff?
Super simple one. I believe the applicant is online as well.
Do we have the applicant online?
What's the name again? Right. This is Peter.
Yeah. Good afternoon. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Lovely.
Name for the record.
Peter Larisella, Tooth and Hand. Thank you so much again. My only concern would be the menu box. That would be the illuminated, internally illuminated. Pardon, I'm a little sick today. In regards to this, we were considering this as an incidental sign. Therefore, we believe that this should be illuminated rather than having another external piece on the building. That would require, of course, more material, additional objects attached to the building. That is my only question here for Kelly, Caitlin, and Jonathan, if we can consider this as an incidental sign instead.
If I remember right, incidental signs can be illuminated. That we need to make sure that it's not across the street from the residential unit, which is again standard language.
Understood. And from what we know is that it's becoming a bowling alley, as well as a rooftop bar, in that world from what we've seen previously submitted, I think in 2022. That is just all we know from at this point.
Okay, thank you. Are there questions for the petitioner?
Woodfield, I'm not exactly clear. Are you saying you'd like to put the box in or you'd like approval to put the illuminated box in? You're going to withdraw it or are you going to leave it in the proposal?
No, the top two images that you're seeing, which is the replacement of an existing light box, which is your left-hand side, which is the signage for the entrance on Broughton, will have externally illuminated sign. We understand that. for the menu box, which would be placed on
the actual window next to the left of the municipal bar signage. We would like that to be internally illuminated, so it's much more simplified in regards to actually being able to read a menu and a bar menu at that entrance, rather than adding more and more lighting underneath the actual canopy slash awning, which is unique to that specific location.
And then you're also continuing the sign to the left of the hotel entrance?
No, that has already been approved with external illumination.
Not the hotel, but the brass sign?
The brass sign has been killed at this point because the architect notified us that the bank box is actually going to continue to exist due to historical regulations.
Thank you.
Are there additional questions for the petitioner? Okay. Is there a member of the public who wishes to speak?
Excuse me. Oh, yeah, microphone is turned off.
Andrew Jones, I don't have an opinion on this application, just the factual record. The building in question, I believe, is the building right next door. I believe that there's a bowling alley, and when this came to you of a year or two ago, there were residential units in the building. That's what it's being renovated for, I think, on the second and third floors. So I don't know if staff can correct that. If that is a part of your consideration, whether it's residential or not, that should at least be factually accurate in the record. Thank you.
Staff did some initial kind of research to determine what was in that building. We have seen comments referenced it being condos or some form residential units. I've also seen plans for our hotel space, so I'm not sure what it's currently being used for. That's why we need it verified.
Whose responsibility is it to verify that?
The applicant.
Okay, thank you. Is there any other public comment? Nobody online? I guess, would the petitioner like to respond to the public comment?
Yes, Peter Larsella, Tooth and Hand. From what we looked at, based on the proposed last submission from that address to the public record, it looked like it was floors of, you know, restaurants and bathrooms. We are happy to reach out to, I presume, the architects to see what they have finalized and what they are planning to do. However, we haven't seen any other submissions since 2022.
Okay, thank you. At this time, we will enter into board discussion and no further comment will be accepted. Mr. Higgins, I will start with you.
I don't really have much of a comment of supporting staff recommendations, except I would remind staff that they are to get us some guidance about signage and all of these sign petitions that come before this board. So that's it.
Mr. Thompson.
Could you run through exactly what we're reviewing here? I'm totally confused. I've looked again at the agenda and something's included, something's not, right? And some requirements, the external. Okay, if you would, please.
Okay, so as of right now, these two elements, which both face Bryan Street, are being reviewed. The applicant is withdrawing this mounted sign right here. Mm-hmm. The hotel sign that you've seen, that's come in front of the board previously. That's only been ruled on. So that's not being reviewed right now. And this, the menu sign, is what's the illuminated sign. This sign is externally illuminated. So it's just illumination on this one sign.
Only this, the restaurant sign?
Yeah, the plates and cocktails or whatever.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Thank you.
Ms. Rowan?
No comment.
Mr. Coleman?
No comment.
Ms. Nagel?
No comment.
Ms. Woodfield?
I think we're saying that, at least I'd like to say that I think the sign above the entrance is fine. That's no problem, correct? It's the whether the other sign is illuminated or not. Is that, that is
yeah,
the
so this sign right here has already been rolled on. It's this one right here, and whether or not there's residents across the street, that's the kind of issue per se.
Kelly, will you pull up the staff recommendation again?
Then the first two conditions were in reference to that sign that was drawn.
Okay, thank you. Is everyone clear on what we're being asked to review and how to word an appropriate motion? If not, I would say lend to somebody who understands what we're doing.
Sorry, I did have a question because now that the staff report is pulled up and the residential unit at 129 East Broughton Street, is that directly across the street? But no, that isn't that where the subway used to be, and that's
what's across the street.
Isn't that becoming a bowling alley? So is it residential? Okay.
Yeah, so that's what we're unclear about.
But currently it is residential. I thought it was already a commercial situation, so I was a little bit confused.
There's nothing in that space. Okay. So the way that the motion should be worded is to read the staff recommendation. And so they would have to determine if it is determined that they are going to be residential, then it would have to be a an externally illuminated sign.
But then it's hard to determine that right now because it isn't, and they're different owners.
That's why
people.
It gets deferred to staff and their recommendation and their ruling on whether or not it's a residential unit.
Okay, thank you.
Is everyone good? Okay, I will entertain a motion.
Higgins. With regard to 132 East Broughton Street, 24-006557 COA, I move the Savannah Historic District Board of Review approve the illuminated and non-illuminated signs at 132 East Broughton Street with the following condition to be met prior to work taking place because the work is otherwise visually compatible, and that condition being if it is determined that a residential unit is within 129 East Broughton Street, the internally illuminated sign will need to be either non-illuminated or externally illuminated.
Thank you, Mr. Higgins. Well-worded motion. The motion on the floor is to approve with the staff recommendation that pending a determination on a residential unit at 129, the illuminated sign be approved unless it's residential, then it would have to be externally illuminated or non-illuminated. Is there a second?
Rowan, second.
Thank you, Ms. Rowan. Mr. Higgins, how do you vote?
Aye.
Mr. Thompson?
Aye.
Ms. Rowan?
Aye.
Mr. Coleman?
Aye.
Ms. Nagel?
Aye.
Ms. Woodfield?
Aye.
Thank you. Next item up on the regular agenda is the petition of Array Design, file number 24-006567 COA for 132 East Oglethorpe Avenue, rehabilitation and alterations.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the board. This is Caitlin Chamberlain presenting the project. The applicant is requesting approval for rehabilitation and alterations at 132 East Oglethorpe Avenue. Work includes restoring the front porch to its original configuration, in-kind repair to dilapidated wood trim and brackets at the cornice, painting brick columns, stucco, and concrete on the front elevation from white to a darker color, reinforced steel structure at existing main level balcony facing Abercorn Street, and to replace a jib window at the balcony to a single leaf swing door with transom above for balcony access. So we'll just kind of walk through the plans of what's existing and what's being proposed, you'll see the biggest change is going to be on the front facade, which is taking a non-historic porch and putting it back to something that was seen in earlier photos and is actually nearly identical to the building next door. So from the research the applicant provided, it looks like these may have been done at the same time. And with that information, they gave us a lot of detail. It was built in 1871. It functioned as a residence, but in the early 1900s, the raised basement level was converted to commercial use. The applicant went over the history, including the Sanborn and cadastral maps, which show how this property changed over time. So just to go through each of the elements with regard to the portico restoration on the Oglethorpe Avenue elevation, the standards are met because the plan seeks to restore a historic, though likely not original, porch configuration. The porch is not conjectural because there are older photos that show it before the metal railings were installed sometime in the 1960s or 70s. Based on these photos, it can also be determined that the porch at the adjacent property is nearly identical as mentioned. The structure dates to approximately 1895, the one next door, that is. So it's possible they were done around the same time, which was still within the period of significance. So it did gain its own historic significance and would be appropriate. Just to kind of show some of the details and how they started changing a little bit. Little by little, but what still remains, a little bit of that is still there. So for the balcony reinforcement, that also meets the standards. Staff recommends ensuring that the diagonal steel struts that are proposed to be installed for structural support are installed through the mortar joints. The Google Street View image from 2007 shows that there had been such a configuration, but this was an older picture's not the best because the 2007 ones aren't very clear, but it's clear enough to show that this is not the same balcony. It had clearly been changed at some point between then and 2012 when the street view shows the more plain railings that are there now. A COA was not located to give any insight onto that, but we just know that's not original. So for the request to turn one of the jib windows into a door may create a false sense of historical development, as it appears that these windows have always been in place and would have been used for balcony access. Other Italianate buildings in the vicinity do not show this type of configuration, as jib windows were designed to also function as doors. A walk around East Oglethorpe Avenue showed that balconies had similar windows, or in some cases, a set of narrow French doors that appear to be from the time period. So we'll see, you know, here's just some of the ones around that did have a similar balcony configuration. Some did have windows, some had French doors. This one is a little further down Oglethorpe, but still, I would say it's still close enough. If we go back to the elevation of what's proposed here. So staff found that they could not support that change with this type of a door. However, they were recommending that the design includes either French doors, like what is seen on the historic buildings, or to omit that part of the plan. Since the time of the writing of this report, conversations had continued with the applicant where they have now provided a revised design. And I will let her walk you through that too, but just to have that up. So instead of that door, it would be something that would fit in the opening, but it seems more appropriate to what's in the historic context around it. And also, it looks like in some of the older historic photos, there was a set of French doors on the roof, top balcony access on the front elevation. So that's where currently this is what's seen, not original. But you can see that somewhat in these pictures. The other work that's proposed, just to quickly go over that, is just that in-kind repair work to at the cornice, fascia, and soffits, and then repainting column stucco and the painted brick only on this bottom elevation here. So we're not talking about anything historic that's not been painted before. So the only thing is that it says that the color choice is to be decided. So one of our recommendations is just to ensure that it's provided to staff for review and approval before painting. So with that, the staff recommendation is to approve the requested rehabilitation and alterations for the property at 132 East Oglethorpe Avenue with the following conditions to be reviewed and approved by staff prior to starting the work because the project is otherwise visually compatible and meets the design standards. One, submit the paint color selection for the repainting, and then to leave the existing jib window in place on the Abercorn Street elevation or present a design that is consistent with the historic context, such as a set of French doors sized to fit the opening. Thank you. I'll be happy to take any questions.
Thank you, Caitlin. Are there questions for staff on this application?
Woodfield, could you please put the new drawing up from the owner? Because I'm unclear. Do you think this is compatible?
I believe just from what we've seen around that it could work, that it is, especially more than the more modern looking single swing door that had been originally presented.
So would you revise your recommendations now?
We would, but because this had come in after this had been published, we hadn't had it, but this is something the board can decide. Have you find this an appropriate design, then yes, I would recommend when that motion is presented to include that.
Thank you.
Are there additional questions for staff? Thank you, Caitlin. Would the petitioner please come forward and state your name for the record?
Thank you, Caitlin. Madam Chair and the board, my name is Shauna Casera with Array Design. I'm the architect working on this renovation. And I think everything was pretty straightforward in the application other than Caitlin's assistance with saying, you know, let's look at this as a French door instead of as a single swing door that kept part of the original transom. We were creating a transom with the jib window and putting a single leaf door below it. So this morning is when I submitted this drawing and just pulled the door up here so that you're seeing it not behind the railing. But, you know, that's one of the big things that I would like your feedback on today. Currently, it is a jib window that matches the one adjacent to it, both of them leading out to this balcony. While we're on this facade, I have been in contact with Frank Martin, structural engineer with RWP, trying to design a structural reinforcement that is least imposing to the balcony. My client's concern, the owner's concern, is that this being on the parade route and stuffing a bunch of people out there, he wants to make sure that we are structurally sound and safe. Thought it was very interesting that there were once struts up there and that for some reason they're gone. But the photo that was presented with diagonal struts going back to the building is exactly what we're also proposing. And those would be 3x3 tube steel painted a dark color. You would also have a large piece of steel coming across the front of the balcony that would connect to those struts. So that's the intention with supporting the balcony. And then the other major facet of this, of the project is rebuilding the front porch, portico and stairs. Oh, hang on. Caitlin, is it in a different file?
This one we can scroll.
There we go.
The drawings.
Okay.
Back up here.
And what, thank you. And what we found interesting is that there are bits and pieces of the wood portico, oh no, still intact. So we are looking to recreate, you know, you've got this cornice that is still there. We're looking to bring back the balustrade, the columns, and give it a painted finish. And I don't know if you saw Bob Susevich's quatrefoil study on what was originally here, but we feel like we have a good indication of what we would be aiming to recreate.
Thank you. Are there questions for the petitioner?
Just one on so Woodfield. It looked like in the existing drawing there's a solid area under the stairs. Is that correct?
That's correct. All of this has been infilled with block and stucco. It's currently painted white. Let's see if I can zoom in a little bit on the existing photo. So this is PJ Tai's restaurant down here below. So we are looking to paint this existing stucco a dark color on both facades.
Are you taking away the infill under the steps?
We are not, and I apologize, this is confusing, but this is 132 Oglethorpe, the project we're looking at, and this is the adjacent structure, the adjacent residence. That we are using as a guide to help inform how we rebuild the baluster. So that was part of that historical comparison, was we have photos that show that these were both very similar. So we're not going to be doing anything to the infill, but we're really just looking at the detailing at the adjacent structure to help with the parts that we do want to replace.
Okay, thank you for clarifying that.
Yeah.
Are there additional questions for the petitioner? Thank you.
Thank you.
Is there a member of the public that wishes to speak?
Andrew Jones, Oglethorpe Land Coalition, three items. My understanding is that for a contributing building where you have original windows, such as jib windows, they must be restored and repaired. So I'm not sure if the premise is correct that we should be even considering another window. And of course, these are character defining features of this type of house. You know, balconies typically have these windows. They should open up sufficiently to walk through. The three vertical lights should go all the way up into a pocket. So it should be sufficient as is, but I believe that the ordinance requires that it be preserved. If the original balcony was removed very recently without permits, technically you should be requiring that balcony to be restored. Based upon photographs, and there are obviously manufacturers who can recreate any type of iron balcony. On the porch, conceptually, I think it's fantastic that the applicant is seeking to restore it. The problem is we haven't seen these photographs, at least the ones that were Caitlin showed. I couldn't make out the details. And the problem I have without having access to those pictures is that the 1895 building is very much in the Queen Anne style. The building 132 is Italianate. It's much earlier. It's 1871. It's completely different style. And the porches were different. They have some common elements. I mean, here's an example at 2 East Taylor. You know, it's not turned post, but rather paired post or squared post. And then there's usually a little bit of a fretwork bracket in here. So I would say before you draw any conclusions, I think we need to see those photographs and that analysis, because we really don't, under the Secretary of Interior rules, you really don't want to glue an 1890s Queen Anne porch onto an 1870s Italianate building without a little bit more comfort that that was in fact the original condition. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Jones. Is there another member of the public that wishes to speak? Anyone online?
No, ma'am.
At this time, we will enter into board discussion and no further comment will be accepted. I'm going to break a little bit with how I normally do this and add my comment first. I feel like this is the second or third one today where we have the original application that's included in the public record and the agenda and what we've reviewed, and then kind of a last minute change in addition that drastically changes the application that we're reviewing, which presents some challenges for our board sitting up here when an application is presented by the deadline. As submitted is how we're supposed to review it. And then these additional things come in and it kind of changes what we're being asked to do and what we're being asked to approve, and also the conditions in the report that has been reviewed. So I guess my request from staff is that the applications that we review should be reviewed as submitted. So if things come in after the fact, the application or the applicant can present them as part of their presentation responding to board comment. But when they get presented from staff, kind of with a recommendation on the fly, it does present some challenges for us to review. And there's a reason that there's a deadline for submittal, because that allows everyone time to review the application. So I will get off my soapbox, and Ms. Woodfield, I'll start with you for.
Madam Chair.
Yes.
Did you allow the applicant to respond to public comment? Did I miss that?
I may not have.
Yeah, because you might want to offer that.
I'm sorry. I will definitely step off my soapbox and give it back to you to respond to public comment. Just one moment. We've got to turn your microphone on.
Oh, thanks. Okay. I'm going to refer to the historic report that was done by Quatrefoil. In 1965, we still had the balustrade, the newel posts, the porch columns, the gingerbread, which is a little bit difficult to see, and the porch railing on the roof, still intact. There's another photo here. I guess that would be the same as the 1965. So, okay, and then here's the two comparison photos, the property next door and 132 East Oglethorpe. I cannot speak as to whether or not what we're proposing was original, but working with staff, they felt that this was within guidelines and standards and was a step in the right direction, and they have supported removing the wrought iron and getting back to something that was from the period of significance. Whether or not it's truly original to the 1871 construction, I cannot say.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Ms. Woodfield, I'll start board discussion with you.
Thank you.
I have two concerns, observations. One is that I'm not clear what you're going to do on the front. You're going to save some things. You're going to replace some things. I think that needs to be very clear. And I am concerned that we're maybe dealing with two styles, that you don't want to kind of get the styling wrong, because it is such an important period and building in our fabric. And then the second is, you mentioned that you were going to put some metal struts on the balcony. I think we'd want to see exactly how you're going to do that to make sure that that is not kind of a big modern intervention, but it's incorporated into the historic design.
Thank you, Ms. Woodfield. Ms. Nagel?
I agree on the merging of the styles of an 1895 Queen Anne with the building in question. It's kind of a mosh-posh thing, but we would need further clarification and detail of exactly what is being cut-pasted or what the inspiration is, or it needs to be clarified of what exactly that means. I would be concerned with merging those two styles for sure. In terms of the window replacement, I agree with the chair. It's hard to come up with a last minute thing that we didn't really have in our original review of the agenda. So I don't agree with that. But if we are to just discuss the double French doors, because it's before us right now, I don't think that changing one of those two doors that are identical, those two windows that function as doors, one of the two, I think if anything, then we would have to change both or nothing at all, but one only and leaving the other one original, it does not look good. I would disagree with staff in turning it into French doors versus the single pane, because at least the single door can sort of mimic what was there. French doors is a whole other ballgame, and it sticks out on this facade, which is very visible from Abercorn. That is my opinion. I think changing only one of them and then making it French is even worse. I would not support that.
Oh, sorry, Mr. Coleman.
I guess the only thing I question is some of the detailing on the balcony and what that actually would be constructed and how it would look. The issue of the front porch with the photo that shows that it's somewhat going in the right direction. It's sort of hard with no other data to know exactly what's going on, but maybe taking a better look at some of that and maybe simplifying it where it's not so much of a ornate porch design might be helpful.
Thank you, Mr. Coleman. Ms. Rowan?
Yeah, I agree. I have concerns with merging the two different styles because it's definitely not from the same era. And I think that the window needs to stay a jib window. It's original to the building. And so, those are my comments. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Rowan. Mr. Thompson?
Well, this is what I have to say about it, and go back to the chairman's comments that we should have the final proposal to us in the appropriate 1 week or whatever it is we get the packet ahead of time, and that if there's changes after that, maybe it should be put on the continued list if that's an issue that needs to be brought into it. So that's my comment regarding in general, although a French door suggestion is okay with me, and I'm not understanding the conflict there. But
thank you, Mr. Thompson. Mr. Higgins?
I guess I have less problem with the front porch stoop restoration since we have photographic evidence from the 60s that at least this configuration existed. It was fairly common in the 1890s, just with Victorian trim and architecture to update buildings. So I have less of a problem with that. I have a larger problem with the replacement of this window, with the French door or even with the swinging door. We have these little balconies all over town, and people crawl out their windows and get on the balconies. And I just think this could set a really bad precedent. There's one building on Jones Street that I drive past almost every day at Jones and Drayton, where they make use of their little balcony that's above their stoop. And if I saw that with a big French door in that window, it would totally destroy the integrity of that facade. So I couldn't support the window replacement, but I also want to say I totally agree with the chair. I personally do not enjoy getting last minute curveballs that you don't have a chance to fully consider. So we need to stick with some deadlines.
Thank you, Mr. Higgins. I would be inclined with this one to suggest that we continue it to not set a precedent of these last minute slide-ins that change the nature of the application that's before us. But again, I will leave that up to my colleagues. But Ms. Woodfield, I'll go back around to you.
I think our discussion has been really clear that we're concerned about what the exact changes are going to be at the front, at the windows, you know, if there's structure at this balcony, how that's incorporated. And I think we do need to continue this. There's just too many questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Woodfield. Ms. Nagel?
No further comment.
Mr. Coleman?
No additional comment.
Ms. Rowan?
No additional comments.
I just had a recollection when I first came here, I stayed in a bed and breakfast place, and that they had a porch, pretty large porch, and the way you got out to it was through a window. And somebody said at the time that you got taxed based on like the number of doors or something else. So that's why they put windows in where they normally want to have a path through. So, I don't know if anybody knows that it's actual thing or Savannah lore. I don't know, but, you know, I guess it's still the balcony would still be useful if the window would operate like that.
Thank you, Mr. Thompson. Mr. Higgins?
No additional comment.
Thank you. At this time, I will entertain a motion. I see we need a little Nagel. Refresher class on motions.
I move that the Savannah Downtown Historic Board of Review continue the petition number, petition of Array Design number 24-006567-COA at 132 East Oglethorpe Avenue to get further clarification on the design details in the porch and to review or to resubmit with the petition of the desired window before the deadline.
Do you want to continue it to the February 12th?
Sorry, yes, continue to the February 12th meeting.
Okay, thank you. The motion on the floor is to continue the petition to allow the applicant to submit further design details on the porch and resubmit the window design in accordance with the application deadlines. Do I have a second?
Higgins
Sorry,
second.
To the February 12th meeting.
Higgins, second.
Thank you, Mr. Higgins. Ms. Woodfield, how do you vote?
Aye.
Ms. Nagel?
Aye.
Mr. Coleman?
Aye.
Ms. Rowan?
Aye.
Mr. Thompson?
Aye.
Mr. Higgins?
Aye.
That petition is continued to the February 12th meeting. Next item up on the regular agenda is item number 19, the petition of Scott Cook with Cook Architecture, file number 24-006552COA for 21 West Bay Street.
This is Kelly. Again, the applicant is requesting approval to carry out, to construct an addition and carry out rehabilitation work at 21 West Bay Street. So we'll briefly go over the history of the building because that's not played an influence of some of this. So the building was completed in the early 1820s. In the early years, it was used as a post office, a bank, and most notably as a hotel. Like majority of buildings underwent alteration early in its life, and that's described in more detail in the staff report. The best idea or best indication we have that the building looked like originally was an 1832 photograph, or drawing, sorry, that shows this front porch that's on the front of the structure. The building operated as a hotel through the 1860s. Per a newspaper we found, this portico front porch element was removed in 1865. Sanborns from the 1880s show steps in the front of the building. Later photographs show like a balcony element up front as well. Both of these have since been removed and haven't been on the building in a while. The building has, of course, changed hands multiple times and was most recently Moon River Brewing Company. It's worth noting in 2004, a front porch element was approved in a similar or identical configuration to what's currently being proposed. So with that, we're going to go over what the applicant proposes to do. Work includes an addition of an elevator shaft and lobby between the main structure and carriage house, new roofing material, new windows, new shutters, a new porch, and new exterior work doors. Interior work is also taking place, but of course that's not reviewed by this board. There's also some exterior demolition that will be taking place, but none of that is visible from the public right away. So with that, we're going to first talk about probably the most noticeable change that's being proposed. That is the construction of this front portico, front porch type element. Typically, staff would not recommend approval of such an element because it could be conjectural and unproven. But in this case, we have clear evidence that such element existed historically. Again, the element was likely removed in 1865, but it was there at some point in its history. The applicant will need to receive an encroachment permit from the city if this element is approved by this board, and they are in the process of receiving this or applying to receive it. Otherwise, staff does find this element to meet the standards. The applicant is also proposing to open up some of the windows on the front facade. These windows have clearly been closed at some point in time, so they're proposing to reopen in the same size configuration as well as there historically. The applicant is also requesting or proposing an elevator shaft to be installed on the rear of the building. Based on the site visit and the prospective drawings that were provided by the applicant, very little of this elevator will be visible from the public right away. With that and the fact that it is on the rear of the building and minimally attached, staff finds that the elevator shaft overall meets the standards. We do just suggest that another color be proposed because the color proposed is not typically seen for stucco. Overall, the remainder of the work also meets the standards for those kind of the three big elements that we need to discuss. With that, staff does recommend approval of the alteration and rehabilitation work with the two conditions seen on the screen. Board, have any questions?
Thank you, Kelly. Are there questions for staff?
Woodfield, please. Do you know exactly how far out this porch sticks onto the sidewalk?
I will need to pull up the plans real quick, if you don't mind. Offhand, I do not know. The plan should have been 7'4". So not the entire width of the porch, but a good chunk of it.
And do you know how wide the sidewalk is?
Not offhand, I do not know.
Are there additional questions for staff? Thank you, Kelly. Would the petitioner please come forward and state your name for the record?
Hi, my name is Scott Cook with Cook Architecture. Thanks to the staff for a really thorough report. It was really in depth. I really appreciate it. We have no issues with any of the comments or the conditions for approval. I would note that the stucco color that we selected was actually the stucco color of the 2012 bar structure that's on the 2 Whitaker lot, which is basically the Moon River beer garden area. And that's why we picked that color. There is an area where we are taking out a door and putting another door in at a different location. And we need to infill that stucco. And that's why we were matching the existing color, which is kind of a gray. If staff wants us to change the stucco color of the elevator addition, totally fine. That's totally a separate area that we're going to be using stucco on and is completely separate, but would like to go back with that same stucco color where we infill in the gray stucco. And of course the other condition is getting an encroachment petition, which of course we're going to have to do, which will be, a fun challenge because obviously Bay Street, in terms of that corridor has some pretty heavy traffic with large trucks, and we're going to be building a porch or proposing to build a porch pretty far out there as, was kind of noted. But we're willing to try to get that approved with all the city departments, hopefully with your permission for us to build a porch as designed. Happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Are there questions for our petitioner?
Higgins, did you consider bringing the elevator shaft fully within the front half of the building as opposed to putting it on the back?
So actually where the elevator is located is technically in an area that is in between the main building and the accessory building, which is essentially what used to be a carriage house. So there is a one-story roof void that's in between. It's almost like light wells in between. And that's where we thought it would have the most minimal impact, honestly, to the historic building of placing an elevator there. And the fact that it is in between that accessory structure and the main structure, and that there's a pretty extensive existing parapet wall on the west side, we felt like that masked the location of the elevator the most and would be the most loss of historic material. That's why we kind of chose that spot.
Woodfield, I have another question, please. Exactly how are you accessing the lobby to the apartments? It's not real clear to me. Are you coming in off of Bay Street?
Yes. So you would be coming in off Bay Street. There was an existing gate that leads you out into the kind of beer garden or outdoor courtyard area onto Bay Street. And what we're proposing is putting, you know, there's a projection. Okay. Yeah. So basically the elevator is being located right here, right? It's kind of this one-story roof right here. And so what we're doing is you can kind of, you can enter in off of the courtyard, and we're putting in a new fence line inside that matches the existing fence that's around. And then we're putting a doorway right here, and then you'll come into the building. And then this is a lobby on the ground floor to get into the elevator. I can switch over to the plans if I can figure out how to do that. Oh, that's not it. Sorry. That's much better. So here, so you'd be coming in off Bay Street sidewalk and be walking. This is the exterior of the building. We're putting in a new fence and, to kind of create a private kind of courtyard to get into this existing structure right here, which is a one-story vestibule on the outside of the building that was built in 2012. You'll come into now the historic building, and then that's where the elevator is. And then you'd be taking the elevator vertically to each floor to the apartments above.
Okay. And then is there a connection between the restaurant and the beer garden that crosses this path?
Yes, it's right here. So I'm basically building on the inside of the building, a corridor here, renovating some of the restrooms that are here. And so that you'll be coming straight into this bar area. And then you have doors out to the courtyard.
And toward the Bay Street entry, there's double doors going to the sidewalk. Are there also double left of there, this corridor?
Oh, here?
Yeah, those doors.
So this is exterior. This is just a fence. So this is just a walkway on the outside of the building. So this is the end of the historic building. This is actually just an exit door, a fire exit door. These are just steel gates that match these steel gates so that basically at night, if the restaurant is closed, then the residents would come in through this gate and then they could access and go, you know, go up to their apartment. But then at night that this gate can be locked down if the restaurant was closed and they could close the courtyard down. That was the intent.
Okay. And then the construction, the materials of this fence are the same as the exterior?
Yeah,
around
we found the same exact brick material that was used to build the fence back in 2012, and it's the same perforated metal panels in between the brick pilasters. So it would look and feel exactly like it was always there.
Thank you.
Sure.
Are there any additional questions for the petitioner? Is there a member of the public that wishes to speak?
Andrew Jones, Oglethorpe Plan Coalition. The facade restoration is a wonderful project. So we fully support it, in particular, its use of the servo panorama as its source for the design. And actually, we would also support the encroachment if the applicant is interested in community support for those applications. We have received a number of calls from people concerned about the interior details, which I know is not under your purview, but I just want to take this opportunity. If you go online, you can see there still are a lot of wonderful federal details. This was a very important building. This was the hotel that people came to in the 1820s and 1830s. So I guess my question is really one for the applicant. Are you saving those federal details? How much? And can you try to save as much as possible? So that's really a question for the applicant.
Thank you, Mr. Jones. Is there another member of the public that wishes to speak?
Ellie Isaac, Structure Preservation for Historic Savannah Foundation. HSF's ARC is very excited to express support for the work proposed in this petition, especially the reconstruction of lost character-defining features on the exterior. This building is of great historic significance to our city, and we hope the team takes the utmost care in the process.
Thank you, Ms. Isaacs. Is there another member of the public that wishes to speak? Mr. Cook, would you like to respond to public comment?
Yes, we are going to try to save every last detail that is left in that building on the interior. I know that's not part of the purview, but I just wanted to respond to his comment. I'm sure we can talk afterwards. Thanks.
Thank you. Appreciate it. At this time, we will enter into board discussion and no further comment will be accepted. Mr. Higgins, I'll start with you.
No comment other than I support staff recommendations.
Thank you, Mr. Higgins. Mr. Thompson?
No comment.
Ms. Rowan?
No comment.
Mr. Coleman?
No comment.
Ms. Nagel?
No comment.
Ms. Woodfield?
I think it's a very interesting restoration. I think it's a great thing for the city. The one bold move is restoring the porch. So I think it would be very interesting to have it there. It is historical. Fight for it. Thank you.
All right. I'm not going to go around again since there weren't any objections or comments. At this time, I will entertain a motion.
Nagel?
Ms. Nagel, the floor is yours.
I move that the Savannah Downtown Historic Board of Review approve the petition number 24-006552-COA at 21 West Bay Street by Scott Cook Architecture on the basis that the petition meets the standards and the criteria on visual compatibility. Thank you.
Do you want to include the staff conditions?
Wasn't ready to, but
it's necessary because of the encroachment permit.
Okay. And support the staff recommendations.
Okay. To clarify, the motion on the floor is to approve the petition with the staff conditions. Do you want to include both conditions, Ms. Nagel?
Both conditions.
Okay. So to one, select a more visually compatible color for the stucco and dependent on the encroachment permit from the city of Savannah. Do I have a second?
Rowan, second.
Thank you, Ms. Rowan. Mr. Higgins, how do you vote?
Aye.
Mr. Thompson?
Aye.
Ms. Rowan?
Aye.
Mr. Coleman?
Aye.
Ms. Nagel?
Aye.
Ms. Woodfield?
Aye.
Thank you. That petition is approved with staff conditions. Next item that has been moved to the regular agenda is the petition of Eli Lori, file number 24-006553, for 128 East Taylor Street.
Good afternoon again. Excuse me, Jonathan Mill. Let me just pull up. All right, so this is the building in question, corner of Taylor and Abercorn. I'm sure we all know it, walked by it many times. There are no changes proposed to the front or side elevations of the house, the building. What's being proposed, and I know the project architect is here, on the rear elevation, there is an existing porch, and of course, Google never quite gets you where you want. There is a spiral staircase, which you can show you in the drawings, back beyond here. So let me go to the... There we go. So again, property in question, corner lot. Here you can see it better here. Eli got a better picture than I did. Or better street view. So this is what's in question here. This is the existing porch. And then you can just make out there's a spiral staircase that comes down, provides access here. There's some historic photographs. There's another photograph here that shows the rear porch element here, the spiral staircase. And so if you look at the plans, demolition of the existing spiral staircase, and what's being proposed is a new switchback stair, wooden staircase that would provide access from the building into the rear yard. And here's a good, let me zoom out a little bit so you guys can see this better. But this is what is being proposed. The balcony will be retained, and then there will be a wooden staircase that provides access to the rear. And that is the scope of the project. Staff is recommending approval, as you can see in the staff report, and that it meets the standards. We did do some historic research. We couldn't tell when all of these exterior elements dated to, but looking at sandboard maps, they didn't look to be there as of 1955. They're kind of, if you've walked by there, they look kind of put together, like maybe somebody found some historic pieces and they did a very nice job of it, but it's quite clear to staff that this is not original, and the spiral staircase is obviously not original. They are retaining the part that architecturally, in our view, is the most significant and the most visible, and then they are putting in again a wood staircase that meets the standards. We did a little survey. I walked around the neighborhood to look at people's porches and access to their rear yards. There are literally hundreds of different styles and types. So again, there wasn't, you know, a predominant design that, you know, we felt had to be followed. So that's why we recommended that this be on the consent. And that's about it. It's pretty straightforward.
Thank you, Jonathan. Are there questions for staff?
Higgins, and this may be more appropriate for the petitioner, but was there any reason given that it extends to the carriage house building? Is it providing any kind of egress for that building? I'm trying to figure out why it's going from side to side as opposed to being
right
in as much as it could be.
I'll let the architect answer that question for you. I know he's here.
Were there other questions for staff on this one? Thank you, Jonathan. Would the petitioner please come forward and state your name for the record?
Good afternoon. My name is Eli Lurie. The reason that it goes to the carriage house is because the buildings are pretty narrow to each other. This building isn't really conforming with the 75% lot coverage, and so there's really not much room for us to have a wide landing at one end to then turn back around. So that's why we only have this one landing here in the corner. And we've pushed this staircase as far to the west as possible so that it's least visible from any right of way. So it's back in the corner as far as it could be. So that when you're walking by, you don't really notice this. As you could see from the street view, this staircase wouldn't be in view here. It's a very hard to see situation, and it's barely going to be visible here because it's so tucked as far away as we could get it so that it would be least. Oh, gosh. As least visible as possible. This was a tax credit project. They met every stipulation that was required of them to do this project. They have been really good stewards of this property. They focus on the interior to get in the property as soon as possible. And now they're focusing on the exterior, making exterior improvements. And this is kind of the first of many exterior improvements that they're going to be making to this house. Do you have any questions for me on this?
Thank you, Mr. Lurie. Are there questions for the applicant?
Higgins, so why are they doing away with the spiral staircase?
So the spiral staircase that is there currently, let me see if I can find an image of it. It is in really, really bad shape, and it is an extremely narrow staircase. Oops. Which is really only about 2 foot wide. So the fact that it's lasted this long is kind of noteworthy, since, as you can see, it's the same depth as this porch, which is only like 2.5 feet wide. So it's a really unsafe staircase in its current state. So we're looking for a better egress method for this house.
So is this meant for regular use or safety use as for egress?
Both.
Are there additional questions for the applicant?
Coleman, I have a question.
Sure.
Looking at this photo and the metal rail that's on the back, are you proposing a metal rail to remain on this existing porch and then combine it in the wood? I see there's wood at the lower section. How is that being handled up at the top where those two come together if you're maintaining a metal rail up at top?
So we are maintaining everything that is existing right now. The staircase that would be coming off is in this area. So this corner post is maintained. So at this corner post, it would go from metal here on this direction to then being wood on this direction on the new staircase so that it reflects that bottom staircase that's there currently.
Any additional questions?
Woodfield, I don't know that I heard you correctly when Higgins asked if this was going to be used regularly. I mean, it's a big physical structure. It takes away,
I fear that gets into use qualifiers. So I don't really want to speak to usage, since usage isn't really pertaining to this project.
Did you have a design concern with the staircase? You want to reframe your question?
Should I save my comments for our board discussion?
It's up to you. Okay. If it's a question for the applicant, you can ask him, or you can bring other topics up during board discussion.
Yes, I'll bring it up during board discussion.
Okay.
Thank you.
Did you have further questions for the applicant? Okay. Anyone else have any other questions for the applicant?
I do have one last question. Have you contacted or been contacted by the neighbor that is on the other side of the stairwell? Have you guys had any discussion on this? Is there any public comment on the neighbor to the other side of this? None. Okay.
Not to my knowledge.
Thank you.
Anything else? All right. Thank you, Mr. Lurie.
Thank you.
Is there a member of the public that wishes to speak?
Andrew Jones, I would ask that you deny this application. This staircase is highly inappropriate. It's completely visible from Abercorn Street. So this is not like a typical rear stair that you see only from a lane. Neither the applicant nor the MPC has cited a single contributing building within view of this that has a similar configuration. It's the burden of the applicant to make a case to you that this is visually compatible with a contributing building within view of the structure. The applicant hasn't made that case, nor has the staff made that case. And I'll bet you that you cannot find this configuration in another building within view. And this is a wonderful home. It's got a great history. It was the home of the Demery family, a highly respected family with revolutionary prominence. And more recently, it was the home of a well-known collector and antiques dealer, Francis McNary, who had restored the house elegantly and had an incredible collection of classical American furniture. And this alteration to the house does not pay respect to the architecture of the house or the history of the house. It's extremely unattractive. It denatures the historic structure, but fundamentally, it just doesn't meet the visual compatibility guidelines. You haven't been given a case yet for that. I don't see any images of any contributing buildings that we're supposed to be comparing this with. So I don't think you can approve it. The case hasn't been made. They have to come back and make a case. Thank you. Oh, and one additional thing, question for staff. This building, the carriage house, is repainted a couple of years ago. This is part of the same parcel. Were there any permits given to paint this and change it from white to that dark, dark gray color? Because when it was being repainted, I didn't see anything posted. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Jones. Is there another member of the public that wishes to speak? Would the applicant like to respond to public comment?
I would just like to say that the current owners have been very good stewards of this property. During Skeeter's time of owning this, as far back as 1996, this was five different apartments. So this was an apartment building. He restored the main level of this house, but the rest of it was all apartments. And so the current owners are living in most of this house right now. And as with respect to this design, we've pushed it as far away from the public right-of-way as possible as to make it less visually impactful. Continuing existing materials that are already there, keeping everything that is there other than a non-historic metal spiral stair. Thank you.
Thank you.
I would just add two quick things. We will check on whether there was a permit to paint the carriage house. But in terms of the standards, just so you all are clear, the visual compatibility standards does not mean that this design has to match another design. It means it has to be visually compatible with the contributing buildings. So that's the standard. It's not that we have to find an exact match to this design that's within view and you have to copy that. That's a misreading of the standards. Just want to be clear about that.
Yep. Thank you for that clarification. At this time, we will enter into board discussion. No further public comment will be accepted. Ms. Woodfield, I'll start with you.
Thank you. I find it, the staircase to me totally takes away from the balcony and the, you know, kind of the historic front building with its character and integrity, the balcony. The spiral stair is so unobtrusive because it's small and it's back. But for me, this stairway that kind of goes out over space and connects these two buildings, I find very historically disturbing.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Woodfield. Ms. Nagel?
No comment.
Thank you, Ms. Nagel. Mr. Coleman?
I think my only comment is, in looking at what's presented on the screen here, that without having the background buildings and the other things that would help make this stair not as prominent as appear, it does make the stair look like it's really going to stand out. And when you look at the photos and look at the shadows of what's going on, it would change the way the stair would look in there. So just to consider that in context, it wouldn't be as prominent as it appears right now.
Thank you, Mr. Coleman. Ms. Rowan?
Yes. So I'm very familiar with this property. I live across the square, and I would say that all the neighbors would be in favor of this design because it's not as large as it's presenting right now. And the spiral staircase is dilapidated and it's not original to the property. And the home two doors down has a similar design as this staircase. So I just wanted to point that. And I think it's a beautiful design. So, and it's going to add so much to the property because it's actually not that large of a space between the two buildings. It's not. So
thank you, Ms. Rowan. Mr. Thompson?
Well, I'm just sitting here thinking about alternate options here. Well, certainly, I'm sorry. Fireman's pole would probably be a solution. They just slide down the pole on when there's a fire. That would actually be kind of fun, wouldn't it? I should have asked the architect this question, but if you ran what now is the diagonal part of the stairway out parallel to the building the other way and then brought it around and brought it to the ground, is that an option that would hide much of that structure behind direction of the porch? Down, instead of going this way, go that way. I don't know if you got enough room there with the areas. So that would be an alternative that probably would hide most of that stairway. Well, then I would just add I'm in favor of staff recommendation then.
The way that the direction it is now, it's like it's up against the wall. So there's like more room. It's hard to explain. You need to walk past the property, but there's not a lot of room. It would look awkward to me if it was the other direction.
I was trying to.
Yeah.
Thank you, Mr. Thompson. Mr. Higgins?
I mean, I'm not wild about it. But the explanations have been made and the discussion has definitely helped in my understanding of the motivations in this. While I would like to see it tucked in a little bit closer, I think by keeping it to the back of the courtyard, it's going to minimize what you see of it. And as I said, the explanations have been satisfactory.
Thank you, Mr. Higgins. I'll go around one more time, Ms. Woodfield.
My comments stand from earlier.
Thank you, Ms. Woodfield. Ms. Nagel?
This is a tough one because there are so many homes that this has been done to, and I find them all really intrusive and blocky looking. These stairs, once you build them, those columns, they add up, and the railings, it adds up. I live next to one, which is dreadful. I think it takes away the view from the other person to the street. So on a design perspective and on the perspective of how it's going to look, I don't think it's going to be an improvement on the home at all. I think it's definitely takes away from the beauty and the charm of that spiral staircase, which could be dilapidated but could be replaced. They're replaced all the time. So I would say, you know, there's nothing that I think this board can really say to say, no, you can't build this. I would just I would suggest just on a more suggestion level on the design perspective that it is intrusive. It does take away that view from the other side, and that a spiral can always be replaced. But that is neither here nor there. So I think that the petitioner has made a point, and that there's nothing about it that as a board we can or should deny.
Thank you, Ms. Nagel. Mr. Coleman?
No additional comment.
Ms. Rowan?
No additional comments.
Mr. Thompson?
Ditto.
Mr. Higgins?
No additional comment.
Thank you. At this time, I will entertain a motion.
Rowan? I move that the Savannah Downtown Historic Board of Review approve the petition number 24-006553-COA 128 East Taylor Street as requested, because the petition is in compliance with the visual compatibility criteria and design standards as set forth in the City of Savannah's zoning ordinance.
Thank you, Ms. Rowan. The motion on the floor is to approve the petition because the work is compatible, visually compatible, and in accordance with design standards. Do I have a second?
Thompson, second.
Thank you, Mr. Thompson. Ms. Woodfield, how do you vote?
Nay.
Ms. Nagel?
Nay.
Mr. Coleman?
Aye.
Ms. Rowan?
Aye.
Mr. Thompson?
Aye.
Mr. Higgins?
Aye.
The ayes have it. That petition is approved. Next item up on the agenda is the petition of Christian Sotil with Sotil and Sotil, file number 24-006565 for 501 East Huntington Street.
All right. Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the board. This is Caitlin Chamberlain. The applicant is requesting approval for color changes to the historic house and an amendment to the previously approved iron fence infill for the property located at 501 East Huntington Street, changing it to brick infill and including a wooden privacy gate. The proposed work also includes replacing an existing wooden fence at the side and rear and including a wooden pedestrian gate with the new fence and in-kind replacements of the non-historic newel posts. So we'll just go through the submittal packet. So we have a site plan here showing, you know, existing but also proposed conditions. And I know it's hard to see in the photo, so I just wanted to point out on the site plan that where this gate is being proposed, there is kind of a private driveway and a courtyard before you get to the garage. It almost looks like on the drawings that it's like right there. But I was hoping I still had the model from when this came to you the first time, but the earlier previous architect on the project had taken that. But this, you know, it's hard to tell on the drawing that that's not like right there. So they wanted to have that gate for a little more privacy. But just to go through some of that's probably the most notable change would be adding these gates. And then instead of this metal infill, it would be a brick lattice infill. It provided a very detailed color palette for the color changes. Staff found that were visually compatible and appropriate for, let me get back. I'm going to give you the overview of the existing site. This is where that garage is going to be built. There's two new construction houses to the side of this, and this is on the corner lot. These are the non-historic newel post areas that are going to be redone, replaced appropriately, as can be seen here. Those are some of the details of the elements that are being proposed and the color scheme. So that's that privacy gate and then the fencing and pedestrian gate detail there. The refuse storage area screening, which is required by the ordinance. And there we have the garden wall infill. In the case of this project, staff found that these elements all did meet the standards and were visually compatible, and therefore are recommending approval. Let me go back to the... So to approve the request for an amendment to the new construction. Oh, sorry, that's the wrong one. There's too many of these in a row. All right. There we go. To approve the request for an amendment to 24-00182-COA for the property at 501 East Huntingdon Street for rehabilitation and alterations as requested because the work is visually compatible and meets the standards. Thanks, and I'll be happy to take your questions.
Thank you, Caitlin. Are there questions for staff on this one?
A couple. On the side fence that's along Price Street, what's the different distance between the fence and the house?
Let's see. We may need to confirm that with the applicant, but let's see if the site plan gives us a little more insight. It looks like it's 3 feet.
Don't we require 4 feet when a fence is running parallel to a historic structure?
I don't believe so. I think it just needs to be within the setbacks.
And can you?
There's a parallel of 5 feet when it runs between a different structure, if that's maybe what it is, but that doesn't come up otherwise for the fence distance for our ordinance.
So there's no distance requirement from an historic structure to the fence?
I don't believe so. But he does have 3 feet here.
And was there any, and that, yeah, the refuse bins, are those on the west side of the fence? Should be on the sidewalk?
See, all right, that, let's get some clarification from the applicant. The way that I understood it was that it wasn't, but if it is, yes, they would need to get an encroachment, but I don't know if that would be approved by the city, but that would be a question with real estate services they would need to look into.
And the height of the replacement fence on Price Street is going to be 8 feet proposed?
Yes.
Do you know what the height of the current fence is?
The what?
The height of the current fence?
I don't know. I think that information wasn't provided, but 11 feet is the maximum allowable on side and rear fencing.
Woodfield, is that true on a public street like Price? 8 foot high fence is very high.
That's the ordinance says that 11 feet is the maximum. It doesn't really specify where, just within that district.
Were there additional questions for staff?
I kind of want to go back to the distance from built. Yeah, there we go. A minimum of 5 feet must be provided between a fence and a building where they are parallel. So I'm not sure why this is being allowed, at least for the area where it's running parallel to the house.
I guess like the way that this has been reviewed in the past is it's other properties, but I don't know if I'm honestly not sure. I mean, if they are amenable to moving it or if it's because it's replacing something that is already in place. I know in many cases when it's somewhat of an in-kind replacement in terms of where it's located, there hasn't been an issue with that before. And there's certainly several examples throughout this area that have this type of fencing and distancing. Clearly they don't really have the space. Sometimes there isn't 5 feet. However, I don't know. That's just how we'd had previously been reviewing these.
I guess with regard to in-kind replacements, aren't they usually pretty much repair, keep same design, that sort of thing, as opposed to a completely different? How does staff view that?
Well, I just mean in the sense of like where it's going. It's not, you know, he's not trying to push it back inward, which I don't think would be even possible on this lot. But a lot of times with the fence projects that we've seen come in, they're going back where they had been.
Woodfield, I think, you know, if they were just replacing the existing fence, it seems like it would be acceptable. But I've driven by here. I don't think this is more than 6 feet tall. And if you're going to make it 8 feet tall, you know, you are getting, you know, an obstruction to this very beautiful historic building. And if you look at the property to the right of the fence, that looks like a neighbor's property. So are you suggesting, you know, putting an 8-foot fence that close to a neighbor's home?
That would be a question for the applicant who is suggesting it. So I would suggest checking with them. I believe they're online.
I've got one other question. Is there any, in looking at this, was there any precedent in the area for this front lattice and the solid gate that kind of wall off the area where the driveway is?
This is a very unconventional street. There's not really any precedence. This is one of a kind on this block. Where you're seeing these empty lots are now, as we said, the two houses that got approved along with these a few months ago. We have this church building here. We have some, you know, just some frame two-story buildings, and then we get into some one-story. So there's not really any consistent design seen upon here. And since this is kind of a standalone design, using the standards for fencing and walls was found in staff's view to meet that. So that was kind of the basis for that decision or recommendation rather.
Mr. Thompson.
Going back to the other side of the house for the fence, if you would please. It appears that the fence that covers up the corner of the house there looks like it was put in at a different time than the other fence, because it looks like it's a little bit different construction, different boards. Is there something behind that fence that they're trying to shield or because I think going back Mr. Higgins' comments, if I understood him right, it would make more sense to take that fence to the corner, back corner of the house, and not up alongside of it like they're doing it. And I guess applicant can address that.
Yeah, because like we're not here to design it for them, but we just kind of review what's presented to us. So,
well, I support pulling that fence out of there and constructed. It'll look better from the street for sure.
Were there additional questions for staff on this one? And we have the petitioner online.
William Santiago should be online.
Here as well.
Oh. Sorry, didn't mean to discount the in-person.
No.
Just state your name for the record.
Yeah. Good afternoon. Emily McElroy, preservationist, Sotil and Sotil. And then as Caitlin said, joined by William Santiago online. Christian and William are designing on location in Charleston this week. They're sorry not to be here in person, but William is here online. And he's going to answer any questions first, but I'm here to provide any technical support. If anything goes sideways, I'm happy to also answer questions, but I'm going to let him take it first. So.
Okay, great. Yeah,
thank you. Thank you, Emily. And thank you, Madam Chairperson and members of the board. I really appreciate all your time here. I know you're volunteering your time. I will go ahead and say, you know, I'm happy to answer any of those questions that I heard kind of being put around here. We did submit this and we're in agreement with the staff approval, and if we knew we were gonna be here on this regular agenda, I would have been there in person. So I apologize for not being present to address you in person. Regarding some of the questions there, we were looking at replacement of that fence really as like in kind, and so that's where that height came from, and that's where the footprint came from. We were not looking to make any new moves there. And the current fence is at least 7 feet tall. When you're looking at the street view there, it's in line there with the head height and the door height next door at 608 Price. So I know that it's got some height to it. Regarding some of the things I heard come up, just to answer your questions, there is a the trash, the refuse screening there is on the public side of the public facing side of the fence. So it would be a situation where we would be seeking an encroachment permit from the city for that. But the, as you can see, 608 Price puts their trash there, and we're looking to see if we can create a solution that would encompass their trash and ours so that it wouldn't sit out there. The properties across the street have their trash kind of just out on Price, and we were kind of hoping to avoid a similar situation with how that proceeds. When it comes to the brick lattice there in the front, we were going there. We were just swapping out the infill from iron to brick lattice. And from our point of view, the base of that building, the masonry base of that building actually has brick lattice in the crawl space there. So that's kind of where we were taking our cues from. And really, we're just trying to offer a little bit more privacy there for the privacy. I know we could go up to 8 feet there, but we were trying to keep it down at 6 to keep some of the sight lines, just to provide some privacy for that courtyard there. But according to our reading of the ordinances and things, we were within our kind of guidelines there. So we felt good about that. And with staff's recommendation, we felt good about it too. But I guess I can answer any more specific questions that anyone on the board might have at this time.
Higgins, have you considered pulling the fence back to the south corner of the house?
We didn't, just because it was there already. We didn't even anticipate that being something that would be an issue, but we figured we would just build the fence right where it was, but it's clearly in poor shape, so we were just looking to replace it. So to plainly answer your question, no, we had not considered that. But I don't know that it was completely out of the question. It just wasn't, it didn't come up.
And is there any reason you can't pull the refuse area back behind the fence line as opposed to encroaching on the sidewalk? Because I know that the cottages on Price Street have no place to put their garbage. Mm-hmm. I face that same dilemma with my house, where we have no place to put the garbage and it sits out front and I hate it, but I have no choice. You, however, have a large rear yard that it seems you could pull those back into the yard. Is there some reason you can't?
That was getting to some programming usage for the back space where the trash was there, but where the refuse there was. But the reality is that, I mean, we can move the trash. Obviously, they're on wheels. We can move them wherever. We just felt like, regardless of where we desire to put them, our best intentions plan-wise are always going to end up being changed by people who use the facility. So we're hoping to kind of mitigate this issue in the future by having a place where they could belong instead of a place where they just kind of end up. And especially considering that cottage right there, trying to keep the corner tidy itself, thought if we provided a place for ours and theirs, that it would keep at least even this view shed right here looking different in the future.
Higgins again, with regard to the front, the front fence, have you considered using any more kind of open materials, such as retaining the wrought iron and doing an iron drive-through gate, as opposed to basically walling this off? That's a very it's a very pedestrian-oriented street. People walk this all the time. And it just seems a little off-putting. Have you considered other materials?
We did consider materials, other materials. The idea, even in going from the iron to the brick, was to provide a little bit more privacy. And the reality is, too, that with that being a gate for a vehicle to drive through, unsure exactly how often that's going to be, like, completely shut. But realistically, we looked even down the street at, like, for example, Emmanuel Baptist Church across the street has their fence kind of proud of their facade coming towards the street. And even the King Tisdale Cottage down the way at 528 East Huntington has a similar situation where when it comes to their side yard, where you drive in, they have a solid, closed situation there. And, you know, we looked at the ordinance and looked and saw that it was within the design guidelines. So thought that would be a good thing, especially if someone's going to be, wanting to use that side yard, you know, with kids or something, just to be able to make sure that it's closed up like that. And, they had a little bit of privacy. I think that was the design idea there. And as Caitlin mentioned, I know it's a little bit, oh, thank you. As Caitlin mentioned, I know it's a little bit unclear in the elevation, but it is back at where the building actually ends. It is even with the facade. It is not proud of it. Does that answer your question, Mr. Higgins?
It provides some explanation, yes.
Are there additional questions for the applicant?
Woodfield, please. This is a very ornate building. It's very square, orthogonal, and I'm surprised and questioning. I mean, did you consider that maybe this gate needed, you know, the two gates that needed to be following the theme of the house with these square shapes?
The idea with the little arch there was just to provide a little bit of differentiation between the gate portion and the wall portion. In reality, I think it to answer your question, what was considered there, we took a similar approach on both the vehicular gate and the pedestrian gate. Just that the arch frame was just a little bit more welcoming and just a signal. But yes, I do feel like there is a difference there between the very square nature of this kind of Second Empire facade and that eased top there of the gate. But that was an intentional choice there to try and make it feel like a more welcoming spot. And I know that we were talking about privacy there, but even the ease of the shoulder, if you will, on those gates helps to reduce the severity of the gate and to kind of to let it be what it is, kind of carriage wise.
Thank you.
Yes, ma'am.
Any additional questions for the petitioner? Okay, thank you. Is there a member of the public that wishes to speak on this? Anyone online?
No, ma'am.
Okay. At this time, we will enter into board discussion and no further public comment will be heard. Mr. Higgins, I'll start with you.
Two things. With regard to the Price Street side, that fence, I think, in my opinion, it's not an in-kind replacement because it's going to a solid fence 8 feet tall, as opposed to something that has a more, you know, 6 feet with possibly 1 foot of lattice, whatever you want to call those things that are falling apart. It's just such a prominent side. So I don't think it's an in-kind replacement. And if it is not, then especially where the fence runs parallel to the house, it should not be built like that. The ordinance is clear. It's a 5 feet where it runs parallel to a building. And you don't have 5 feet there. With regard to the refuse containers, there's no reason that you can't pull those back behind the fence. You could put gates, whatever, doors to put the bins in, but still keep them behind that fence. Price Street is very busy. And when you're walking on Price Street, you always feel like a car is about to run over you. So by pushing people out, you know, further, it just makes it less pedestrian friendly. And there are other ways that they could do it. With regard to the Huntington Street side, I understand why they're doing it, but again, it almost creates a fortress-like appearance. This could be accomplished by keeping the wrought iron that we previously approved, which I appreciated when we approved it then because of the openness it provided. You could do the same for a driveway gate, so you would have the security, that sort of thing. And if you want to achieve privacy, there are lots of different ways you can do it, plantings, landscapings, that sort of thing, without walling the yard up from the public right away. I think it detracts from one of the most significant houses in this ward. There's nothing else like it in this area. So I think, in my opinion, they should possibly go back to the drawing board and see if they could come up with something that is more visually compatible to the area.
Thank you, Mr. Higgins. Mr. Thompson?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Higgins. Everything you just said, I agree with, and including the suggestion that we continue to reevaluate.
Thank you, Mr. Thompson. Ms. Rowan?
I think that the brick lattice complements the house because it's, again, on the house. And I also think the wood gate complements the home because the home is made out of wood. So I think it's a beautiful design. Those are my comments.
Thank you, Ms. Rowan. Mr. Coleman?
I agree that the brick lattice is more in keeping with the foundation of the home and is compatible with the residence as is. I think the issue of the fence along Price Street is simple to pull it back to the corner. I think I can agree with Mr. Higgins on the fact that if the 5 foot is an issue and it does not have to be an exact in-kind footprint solution, I think pulling it back to the back corner should not cause any hardship upon the petitioner to do that. But the front elevation, I think, with the brick lattice is in keeping with the design, and I don't see the iron fence really tying to the home visually in a strong way, in my opinion.
Thank you, Mr. Coleman. Ms. Nagel?
I agree with Mr. Coleman on the Price Street side of the situation, as with Mr. Higgins, so I won't repeat that. But in terms of the Huntington Street side, I think there's a lot of stylistically, there's a lot going on. I do think that solid gate is solid, and it's very, very different to what we were approved before. So I think stylistically, I also agree that if the intention is privacy, there's plenty of green ways to do that on the iron. So I would disagree that lattice brick is the most visually compatible way to do this and to match it to the house and the gate as well. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Nagel. Ms. Woodfield?
I agree with previous comments on the Price Street fence. I think it needs to stay the proper distance away from this very historic building. I think replacing the 7 foot height should be plenty, that there's no need to go further. And these are a lot of buildings close. I think going 8 feet is very unfriendly and unfriendly to Price Street. As far as the Huntington elevation, I don't see any historic connection between the brick lattice infill and the house. There are many, many places in Savannah where you have the brick edging with the wrought iron. So that is a more consistent way that they did fences in the historic district. And I don't find that this solid wood fence with an unusual shape is adding anything to the composition. I think it's taking away from the house and not letting the house be the main feature of this elevation.
Thank you, Ms. Woodfield. I'll go around one more time, Mr. Higgins.
I just want to comment on something that was just said. I think you're very right. With the brick lattice, this house should be the star of the show. It should not have things attached to it, you know, detracting from it. Let this house is just too special. It should be the star.
Thank you, Mr. Higgins. Mr. Thompson?
I'd just like to add that actually I put up a fence like this wrought iron one in my house so that you could see through to the backyard because it was cutting off the view. So I'm sort of in favor of that opening of the view and, you know, see the depth of the lot and how it all works together.
Thank you, Mr. Thompson. Ms. Rowan?
I have no additional comments.
Mr. Coleman?
Yes, I just want to add that the use of the brick lattice and iron infill is prevalent throughout the district. It's not one versus the other. I think it's all based on the appropriateness of what you consider to be visually compatible. So it's more of an opinion on that more than a fact.
Thank you, Mr. Coleman. Ms. Nagel?
No additional comment.
Ms. Woodfield?
Just one more reiteration that we haven't repeated, and that is that the idea of putting a fence on the sidewalk to hide trash cans, I think is very difficult for the public. I mean, that's a walking street. I think that's inappropriate.
Thank you. The encroachment wouldn't be for us to decide, just for that point of clarification. If there's no further discussion, I will entertain a motion.
Higgins. I move the Savannah Historic District Board review with regard to 501 East Huntington Street, file number 006565-COA. Continue this case to the February 12th, 2025 meeting so that the petitioner and staff can continue to work on visual compatibility issues, specifically with regard to the Huntington Street fences and with regard to the, and also with regard to the Price Street fence, and also to bring the Price Street fence into compliance with current code.
Thank you, Mr. Higgins. The motion on the floor is to continue to the February 12th meeting to allow the petitioner to work with staff on visual compatibility of the fence along Price Street to bring it into compliance with code, and the Huntington Street fence for visual compatibility factors. Do I have a second?
Thompson, second.
Thank you, Mr. Thompson. Mr. Higgins, how do you vote?
Aye.
Mr. Thompson?
Aye.
Ms. Rowan?
Nay.
Mr. Coleman?
Aye.
Ms. Nagel?
Aye.
Ms. Woodfield?
Aye.
The ayes have it. That petition is continued to the February 12th meeting. That brings us to the end of our not-so-regular agenda. We didn't have any staff reviews this month, nor did we have work performed without a COA. Nothing has been deferred to staff. There are some stamp drawings included. Is there any other business to be discussed before we dismiss? Nothing from the staff side?
Nothing from our end. Thank you.
Awesome. Well, I move to adjourn.
Thank you for your time.
Actually, I don't even move. I just adjourned.